Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling, OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
And be the man.
You gotta be the man.
Woo! It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
Hey, this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another wonderful evening of Online World of Wrestling Radio. I am your host, Alan Wojcik. Survived another birthday. Yes, turned 36 on Wednesday. Awesome. And since my daughter watches a show on Nickelodeon called Victorious, one of the characters celebrates a birth week. Screw it, I'm doing a birth month for the next 4 weeks of this show. Every night will be my four favorite bands of all time, music night. So tonight, you get the godfathers of techno, pop, and goth. You get Depeche Mode night here. It's also kayfabe night because during the 10 p.m. hour, we will be joined by the man, the myth, the legend of kayfabecommentaries.com. The folks that just put out not one, but two, well, actually a whole bunch of U-Shoots this month, last couple months. The most recent two put out was the U-Shoot Live with TNA President Dixie Carter, which we have addressed on this program. And if you go to the OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com site, you'll see my review along with Brad Dykens' review and some other folks. And the newest release was the Lost Questions with Jim Cornette. As Mace had outlined a couple shows ago, he sat through the guest booker on Jim Cornette where he rebooked the invasion angle of WWE WCW back in 2001. Then Jim Cornette did almost a 4-hour U-Shoot, so he's got 2 more hours of it coming. And wow, it's pretty crazy. 877-588-9877, option 1 is the way to join us on Online World of Wrestling Radio. And it's option 1 to get to us, and I apologize if the sound is as crappy as I think it is. Hopefully everybody can hear it, and if not, I apologize. Not really sure what's going on with my headphone tonight. I'm not going to cry, though. I promised I wouldn't cry. If you want to jump in also, Sir Rockin is on the Skype network. For the first hour, we are going to have not one, but two contributors from the Under the Ring blog, which if you're a fan in the New York area, you've seen their articles in the Poughkeepsie Journal. And most recently, they've actually been integrated into the website. So you go to blogs.poughkeepsiejournal.com/underthering, or backslash under the ring, and you'll get both Phil Strum and Kevin Scott, both of us joining tonight, because we're going to open up talking about the most, one of the weirdest pay-per-views in wrestling history. Kevin, we're going to go to first, because he's more the TNA persona than Phil is. Phil has done interviews with TNA talent, but we've had Kevin on mostly. Your overall impressions of this pay-per-view, Kevin?
Okay, to be fair, I actually appreciate the fact that they presented quality wrestling matches, which TNA does have a, I can't say consistent history, but they do have a history of providing quality in-ring work. Of course, the flip side of that is that most of the stuff they've put together in terms of, you know, building this little thing like the storylines make absolutely no sense, so that even though you have this great match, which is fun to watch and, you know, you can get into it, and that's more credit due towards the actual wrestler in the ring, but the overall story, they have a hard time just doing stuff straightforward, something that you don't really have to have a map to follow, or even better yet, you actually, you know, usually get clues in wrestling in terms of how you're supposed to feel about a certain wrestler, what's their motivation, instead of having people kind of vaguely talk about why they hate somebody due to something that happened 10 years ago in another promotion. But as I said, it was a very strange pay-per-view. I can't say that I would ever purchase another TNA show. Thankfully, there's this little thing called the Internet. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. But I will watch the shows and everything, but I just can't. I can't put my hard-earned money towards promotion that makes absolutely no sense.
Well, but as you mentioned, this was a very interestingly booked pay-per-view. And we'll go to Phil for a second here, because the lead-in to this show on Impact, Phil, was just really weird. Because, I mean, you had the reemergence of Lisa Verone, Victoria, Tara. And during the pay-per-view, I was watching it with the Wrestle Talk Radio guys and then did their show. And I stepped out real quick to go check on my daughter, and I came back, and I was like, oh, the Beautiful People match is on. Cool. And I'm like, I typed real fast. I said, did they explain why Tara was dead? And I'm like, what do you mean, no? Your thoughts on this, Phil?
Well, have you guys watched Reaction at all? Because I have. I watched it before for the first time this week. I've caught bits and pieces of it here and there. And it seems like they're trying to explain, like, the previous 2 hours of Impact, if that makes any sense. So they were trying to, I think they might have given, like, a loose explanation of why Tara was in with Madison Rayne Reaction. But there was really no explanation, and it seemed like everybody kind of saw it coming anyway. Not to mention, you know, randomly having Desmond Wolfe back on Impact also and then having him not even wrestle a match at the pay-per-view. So,
well, that was another thing.
One quick second on that one.
Go ahead, man.
Going towards Reaction, same thing where they built up previous storylines and Explosion. Put it on the show that I watch. One, I can't get Explosion. Two, by the time Reaction comes on, it's late at night. I've already spent 2 hours watching wrestling. I'm not going to sit there another hour to find out what I just watched. That's
pretty much. Yeah, we actually, I believe already, we have someone on the line who wanted to talk with us or talk with you guys. Hello, caller. Welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio. Your name and where you're calling from.
Oh, hey, guys. This is Salvatore from Albany, New York.
Hey, how are you? Welcome to the show. What can we do for you tonight?
Actually, I heard that Sean Oliver was going to be on, and I actually had, I think, two pretty good questions for him. I don't know if he's on right now. So
no, he's not. Unfortunately, that's a locked-up interview. It was pre-taped, so we don't have any ability to do questions. What you can do is save them and actually go to kayfabecommentaries.com. They have a really nice message forum, and you can talk to Sean directly from there. I'm sorry if I misled people into thinking that Sean was open right now.
Did you happen to see any of the pay-per-view from this Sunday night? Do you have any thoughts on TNA's move, especially the move to this Thursday night? If you were planning on finding out, you know, the fallout from this show, good luck, because they're not on the air. As a fan, what do you think of that?
As a fan, I'm trying to save up my money for, like, UFC pay-per-views right now, so I have to kind of siphon off what I watch in terms of pay-per-view, so I kind of sort of decided to not download the TNA show. But from what I understand, the Angle Hardy match was excellent.
And was confusing as all get out if you watched it live. I think it's still going on, and they just end. They're still wrestling. Oh my god!
By the way, I want to point out that I did not download that show.
Nobody downloads the show.
I didn't download that show, and I heard from the internet message forums that it was a good match.
Exactly. We're not tracking you at all. Don't worry. We haven't passed this one.
So I didn't see any of that on the internet by illegal means. So, and Mike, again, that's all I have to say.
Well, as a fan, let me ask you real fast, since you are a fan of the product, it seems. Does this tick you off? And we'll go to Kevin and Phil in a second. Does it tick you off that you can't? They're taping last night, tonight, and tomorrow night. But as a fan, you're not going to see a thing on TV till the 16th. Does this bother you at all?
To be frank, as a fan conditioned in this era of the internet, we're conditioned to certain things about knowing spoilers already. So it doesn't irritate. Normally, you would think it would irritate us, but again, we're a conditioned fan, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
So logic would say, yeah, we should be mad. However, again, I'm using that term several times. We're a conditioned fan, and we're very jaded. So the fact that we know that Jay Lethal is the X Division champion, I can say that, right?
No, you can't. Didn't happen yet. We're spoiler free.
I'm sorry. I apologize. The fact that I know something already, it doesn't matter because this goes in line with, you know, me being conditioned to fan that I've become.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of it because from 2004 to 2007, I was your deal.
Exactly.
There's
no secret.
All right, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show. All right, well, thank you. Well, to follow his point, you know, they've been saying, oh, you know, we're avoided, we're not giving stuff away, and I'm like, yeah, but you know, you're ticking these fans off that bought this money, and I forget if Sorokin can cue me in. I think a TNA pay-per-view now is almost $30 a shot, and you ended up sitting through what should have just been a straight-out match for Hardy and Angle, which we verified from the tapes. We got a Sorokin was watching it, and he went back and watched the replay with some friends. And they don't mention at all, you know, Kurt Angle versus Jeff Hardy is for a 20-minute time limit. So not only did you get a 20-minute match, you got another 10 more minutes. So, we already know it was a no contest. And then, of course, Mr. Anderson, Mace's least favorite wrestler, takes out the Pope D'Angelo the Narrow. If you were booking this, Phil, would you rather have just seen these four guys say, you know what, the heck with this? Why are we having these matches? Let's go to Bound for Glory. In on 10-10-10, as Abyss likes to say, and do it that way and let Kurt Angle obviously win. And if the guy loses, he's done. So you're the booker. What your thoughts first off on that match, and should this just be a fatal four-way at the pay-per-view?
I prefer one-on-one. I like the fact that they're doing a tournament. I don't really like the storyline with Kurt Angle, you know, ripping through the top 10 because it kind of got changed once they ran out of dates on RVD and they had to strip him of the title and do a tournament. I think the tournament's taking too long. I think if they can only, you know, if they can, you know, build to it a little bit better, it sounds like, I don't know what happened on the tapings per se. I kind of glanced over them a little bit, but I'm guessing we're probably going to get some sort of a three-way with these three now, and I think they should have just stuck to one-on-one. I also don't know why you would book Angle versus Hardy with such a bizarre finish. It's almost actually the reverse problem of what got Samoa Joe in trouble when he kind of got ticked off about the countdown and the one match that he had with Jeff Hardy on Impact, whereas they didn't tell anybody what the time limit was coming in. And in this case, it actually would have helped quite a bit. I mean, you know, I read something the other day that said in sports, you're never going to, you know, nobody's going to be surprised when there's like 20 seconds left in a period. You know, you're going to know. You know, for everybody, including the announcers, not to cool everybody on that was kind of silly. I mean, it seems to me that it's the foregone conclusion what the end of the story is going to be, because I don't think Kurt Angle is going to go anywhere. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but...
Your thoughts on this whole match, Kevin? Because like, as our caller said, it was, on paper and in the ring, it was one of the best matches of 2010 for TNA Wrestling. And I know I'll probably get slapped by a lot of people for saying that, but... But your thoughts overall on the match and the way it was booked? Because like Phil just said, you had Samoa Joe and Hardy on Impact recently, and Samoa Joe got suspended a month for basically going off like he did.
I completely agree with you. Not only did I think that was the best TNA match of the year so far, that might very well be the one, my favorite match I've seen all year, which is bizarre because I give Jeff Hardy very little credit most of the time. I do have issues in terms of the actual match itself, mainly with Jeff Hardy surviving the ankle lock for what seemed like about 5 minutes worth of time, which just to the point of it almost seemed like he was no-selling the hold. I realize it's supposed to, you know, for dramatic purposes. I would have rather had been the last maybe final 20 seconds of the match, but at least the regulation period, if we want to call it that. The logic behind Bischoff coming out and going, okay, we ran out of the, you know, 20 minutes is up, we're going to give five more minutes because it's such an important match that we actually need to finish. Why give just five more minutes? Why not just have it, okay, the match is going to go until there's a winner? Hey, once again, I realize traumatic purposes, I get that. It just seemed really strange, especially when they did it a second time. Thing I really question is exactly how did that end in a no contest? If they stopped it simply because Angle was bleeding, wouldn't that mean he couldn't continue and Hardy would be the winner?
Yeah, we had that issue on Sunday night. Mason Spug and Tim and even Sir Rockin, who's our producer, chimed in with that. They also felt, and some of the people that wrote into our radio and online worldofwrestling.com mailbox said, why wasn't that match your main event? Because we would type in, we talk in our chat while we're all watching the pay-per-view on TV, and the first thing out of Mace and Omega's mouth was, Pope and Anderson are sitting backstage biting every nail they got off their hands going, crap, we got to follow that.
Right.
And it was just really weird booking, like no specific reason given why London Brawling got the number one contendership on Explosion and then does a promo and then, wait, they're not on the pay-per-view. What the heck happened there? And you had Tommy Dreamer, and everyone knows I'm not an ECW person. I've only learned about it through the DVDs, and I get a lot of crap, and I'm fine taking it. But did it bother either one of you that Dreamer lost to AJ in the I Quit match? We'll go to Kevin first and then to Phil, that he lost with a fork to the eye, man. It was like, oh, Spug on the show and everyone was saying, let him lose the eye, it would have been more dramatic. I was like, what?
The only thing that really bugged me about that match was Tommy Dreamer's new ring attire. That was horrific. I don't know who was the person, the brain trust behind that. That just looked absolutely horrible. But AJ winning, I have no problem with that. I am a huge ECW fan. Love Dreamer, you know, maybe more so what he's meant in the past. But for me right now, going from this point forward, it has to be about the young guys. Having AJ beat Dreamer in an I Quit match of all things, considering Dreamer, you know, the hardcore legend he is, it might not really mean too much to the average fan. But you can look back at that, you know, down the road and go, look, he took out Tommy Dreamer in an I Quit match. it's and I hate to think of Dreamer now as a stepping stone, but let's be honest, that's what his role is these days.
Before we go to Phil, we actually have another caller on the line. This is a shock. I usually don't get callers. Welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio. Your name and where you're calling from.
Is this Mr. Wojcik?
I have no idea.
Is this Mr. Alan Wojcik?
I think that's what my ID says. I hope so.
This is Stan from Poughkeepsie. How are you, sir?
Good. What can we do for you?
I was just listening to you comment on a TNA pay-per-view, and I must say that their chant with their booking is totally wrong. You see, if they were going to, if they knew they were going to have this problem with RVD, why not release him of the title sooner before he ran out of dates, and then you wouldn't have this sarcastic pay-per-view that they put forth on Sunday?
Well, we talked about this last week, that RVD is in a situation where he has, I think it was 75 appearances on his contract, and they were getting close to them running out of it. We actually addressed this last week, that if they had gone over into a penalty phase, they would have to pay out almost in excess of $10,000 every time he appeared. So, you know, it's just one of those weird situations that he's kind of defacing the belt by not dropping it into someone.
He's your heavyweight champion. You obviously thought enough about him to give him the belt. So are you not defacing him as a wrestler by not giving him more dates or giving him the amount of money he demands?
I don't think it's his demands. I think it's just the contract that he signed, and they would have to pay him a lot more money per appearance if he was going to continue to wrestle. And they ran into this problem a couple times. It's just the nature of the contracts that they keep signing with these people, where they have a maximum amount of appearances on them, and they run out of them so fast because they put them on television every week. I don't like it. I'm sure Van Damme probably doesn't like it too much either, because he just basically ran out of them as soon as he could, because they put him on every house show. He was even up, he was even on the Brooklyn TNA house show, if I remember right.
And this isn't something that has happened before, everybody, including our caller. Mick Foley's under the same type of deal. That's why Mick disappeared up until the EV 2.0 return. And at one point, I thought when I covered TNA, there were different kinds of contracts. There was the per-appearance contracts like Nikki Rocks or Roxy, as she was called, in TNA is on. Then, there, you know, like if you flew in, say, like, back in the day when the Naturals were there, when Chase Stevens and Andy Douglas were brought in, if they worked a match on Impact and a match on Explosion, they got paid for those two. But if I'm Christopher Daniels at one point, who we really wish was still here, like Jay Lethal and other guys, they're under an actual contract. So if Jay doesn't work, or Chris Daniel doesn't work, or Sting doesn't work, they're still getting paid. And some of these contracts, like I'm sure Mr. Anderson is on an actual contract, but RVD, unfortunately, I've heard stories that I can't confirm or deny that he's going to make his return to TV before we get to Bound for Glory, which is on 10-10-10. And we're actually going to let you go ahead and go, sir. Thank you for calling in.
I just have one more question.
Okay, go right ahead, please.
If you're going to sign talent like Christopher Daniels, Kamojo, AJ Styles, Mr. Anderson, to those types of contracts, would you not sign your top talent like Kurt Angle and RVD and Mick Foley to those contracts instead of appearance contracts?
If I were Terry Taylor and Dixie Carter, everybody would be under an actual contract, but unfortunately due to the financial structure of TNA Wrestling the way it is right now, you're bringing in guys that if they worked an indie date, I'm sure RVD commandeers the 10 grand that they listed them at. I think Sean Waltman and Scott Hall were pulling in $5,000 for every time they walked into the Impact Zone to film. And you weren't even having to fly the two of those guys in because they live in the Orlando area. No, Team 3D, Orlando area as well. Jay Lethal, I think, lives in Tampa. I could be wrong on that. So you got it's the cost-effective issue. Despite however much money Panda Energy puts into TNA Wrestling and Spike TV puts into TNA Wrestling, and they do, because when Sting first came back from in 2005-06, whenever he came back, before everybody's like, oh yeah, Sting's back. Nah, he's back already. He worked in Nashville, kids. You forget that. And we'll address that in a few minutes. His deal was paid all by Spike TV. His $500,000 was fronted in a combo between Spike TV and Panda Energy. So it's an economic situation that I would have to probably have a PhD to figure it out. And I wish I could. We're going to let you go. Thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate it. As we mentioned...
Keep up the good work, Mr. Wojcik.
All right, thank you for calling in. As we did mention, there is no Impact this week. Spike TV is actually running a show called Gangland, which I found out was on the History Channel. But instead, guys, get this, they're hoping and praying that instead of watching the Super Bowl champs and the Minnesota Vikings, the New Orleans Saints, Minnesota Vikings on Thursday night at NBC, or you're now watching the U.S. Open Tennis, you're going to go to TNAWrestling.com to present the Bound for Glory kickoff show, which will be hosted by Jeremy Borash. The webcast will feature a Q&A with Dixie Carter, the president of TNA, and you'll also see exclusive interviews with many of the stars participating in Bound for Glory. To Kevin and to Phil, are you going to honestly, 9 o'clock, you're sitting there, it's like, football's awesome, yes, but I must go to TNAWrestling.com. I mean, I'm probably going to do it because it's my job, and my team doesn't play on Monday Night Football, go Jets. But are you going to be tuning into this thing online, or is it a waste of your time?
Absolutely not.
I'm not even a football fan, and I'm not going to watch TNA.
Yeah, well, here's something.
I'm actually happy. I'm just happy to have a week off from TNA. If they ran one really good show a month, I'd be thrilled.
Or they could have done it.
Sometimes you need a break.
And here's an even funnier one. They're actually going pay-per-view before they get to Bound for Glory. That there's going to be a knockout-themed pay-per-view, basically with previously aired matches, to debut on August 2nd. It's entitled TNA Wrestling Knockouts Mad Sexy Volume 1. And the online description says, TNA Wrestling Knockouts Mad Sexy Volume 1 will be hosted by Playboy Centerfold and TNA Knockout Christy Hemme. Just don't bring a Playboy to have her sign it. You'll see a very weird reaction. Will feature top matches from the past between TNA Knockouts like Angelina Love, Velvet Sky, and they mentioned Gail Kim. Very surprised they don't get sued for that one. good idea? Bad idea? Do we not? Another one of these? We don't even care?
That's just... Okay, if it makes money, which, strange enough, it might, considering that, you know, these are obviously previously filmed matches, it's just a bad idea. I really don't see anyone having the need to watch it outside of non-wrestling reasons.
The other funny part, and we'll have both men address this, and I'm going to have to read fast because it's a big press release. Think you got what it takes to become the next TNA wrestling superstar? Then it's time for a gut check. They're calling it the first TNA gut check workshop. They actually did this at the TNA Asylum in Nashville a couple times. Will be held on Saturday, September 25th, 1 p.m. at the Rahway Rec Center in Rahway, New Jersey, which I believe is the normal home of Jersey All-Pro and Pat Frank Abadala's promotion. I got his last name wrong. Sorry, Frank. It's going to be hosted by TNA Wrestling Talent Evaluator D'Lo Brown and, get this, TNA founder Jeff Jarrett. They're billing this as the gut check will cover multiple aspects of professional wrestling, and participation in this workout shop is very limited. Prospective pro wrestling prospects will be evaluated through drills, simulated matches, in-ring workout. Jeff Jarrett is quoted as saying the gut check workshops will allow TNA wrestling management to scout up-and-coming talent and give inspiring wrestlers the kind of instruction and advice they can't receive anywhere else. In order to qualify, this is the thing that kind of irked me a bit, but stay with me. In order to qualify, you must participate in www.tnagutcheck.com up until Monday, September 13th at 12 p.m. You have to submit a $20 non-refundable application fee. Accepted participants will be notified via email 10 days prior to the event. At that time, the remaining balance of $230 will be due and must sign a liability waiver. Also helps that they're running the building that night with the TNA live event. To Phil, then to Kevin, I mean, this isn't new. WWE's developmental here in Florida, Florida Championship Wrestling, has done these kind of events too, but... And it's not like they're asking for, you know, give up $5,000 and we'll train you. Do you buy this, that they're really trying to find untapped talent?
I do, because I actually know a couple of people who did the stuff, did the ones down in Florida, and guys really do get signed out of these. They're really looking for, I mean, obviously they want to find the serious people who want to do it if they're willing to pay the money to do it. I mean, it beats the heck out of, you know, just trying to struggle on the indies for years and not get seen. WWE is actually also doing one in New Jersey sometime, I think, in early November, I think, at Matt Barnes Wrestling School. And Johnny Laurinaitis and Ty Bailey are going to be there, too. And I think if Jeff and D'Lo are doing the TNA one, I think Ring of Honor is actually doing one in New Jersey in the next 2 months also. So, I mean, there's a lot of talent in the Northeast that really gets overlooked a lot. I know a lot of guys who haven't gotten the shot before. I know that TNA just signed a couple of them that are going to be doing the Jersey Shore gimmick, which is Rob Echoes, who we've seen up here up in Northeast Wrestling for a couple of years, and Becky Bayless, who has been, I think, working Ring of Honor and a couple of other Shimmery, I think even a couple of other promotions, too, in the Northeast. So it's probably a good opportunity. Is it probably a bit too steep on the wallet for some of these guys who are struggling and working the indies every weekend? Yeah, but if they get seen by the right guys and they get, you know, liked by the right people, you know, it could open several doors for you, especially if all three promotions are doing it in the next 2 months.
And your thoughts on this before we go to break, Kevin? Do you agree with Phil that they may actually score some talent out of this, or is this TNA's financial going, well, while we're here, let's make a couple bucks, since Don West's deal of the day does bring the money in, but let's get some more money? Or do you really go with this, that like Rob Echoes was mentioned, and Becky Bayless, who's actually going to be wrestling here in Florida this Friday for Wrestling for a Cause in Tampa, do you buy that they can score some good indie talent out of this?
I do buy that they're sincere. I agree with a lot of that Phil said. Do I think it's actually going to work out from that aspect? Who knows? I think when it comes to TNA, most of everyone's criticism comes from the fact that they have such a long track record of failing miserably at everything they try in terms of drumming up interest. You know, Dixie Carter just once again has the whole, she has this major announcement to make that's going to change the face of TNA, you know, the rest of history again, like the fifth time this year. It's just so much that it's a huge letdown for the most part that it's really hard to take them seriously a lot of times.
Alright, at this point, we're gonna go ahead and take our first break of the evening. When we come back on the other side, we will get into the WWE NXT Raw SmackDown on the road tonight at Champions. 888. I forgot my own damn number. That's hysterical. 877-588-9877, option 1. You can join us just like everybody else has been doing, option 1. Like I said, this is Depeche Mode night. It's also Kayfabe night. Sean Oliver will join us a little later on in a pre-taped interview. Do apologize for being pre-taped, but some people don't have the freedom like we do to be on at this time of the night. We'll be back on All Our World of Wrestling Radio.
So every day I get all these emails here at CindySin.com. Let me read you the latest one I got. Dear Cindy, Cindy, I just wanted to say you are such an awesome person. And wait, Rock, didn't I tell you to stop emailing me? Oh, this isn't from Rock. This is from someone named Steve. Anyway, if you have any questions about dating, relationships, or sex, email me today by going to my website, CindySin.com.
professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestlers today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Barry. Hannah Christel.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the quickest of all time.
Jimmy Van Der Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Do you live in the Philadelphia, Washington, Cross, New Jersey area and are in need of a licensed massage therapist? Then you need Johnny Cashmere. He specializes in a full-body relaxation experience in 30, 50, and 90-minute sessions. Deep tissue and pressure point treatment are also available. His office hours are 9 to 5 p.m., Monday to Friday. To make an appointment, email backseatjk@aim.com. Johnny also offers one-on-one yoga and meditation sessions. What are you waiting for? Set up your appointment to relaxation now.
Hey everyone, this is the original voice of wrestling, Tim Stein. Catch me talking sense about the WWE, TNA, and the rest on the real voice of professional wrestling talk, Wrestle Talk Radio, Sunday nights, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Back to Depeche Mode night on Online World of Wrestling Radio, also Kayfabe night, because we do have the big kahuna of Kayfabe commentary, Sean Oliver, coming on later on in a pre-tape. Do apologize for the pre-tape, but he said Tuesday, 9 o'clock, sorry, I have some stuff to do with my daughter, and I said, hey, I got kids, I understand, boss, but he gave us an hour of his time, and not being a jerk around podcast, this will be an excellent thing. That was Just Can't Get Enough, which actually is not owned by Depeche Mode. It's actually owned by former lead writer Vince Clark, who went on to be a part of Yaz or Yazoo, and also one of the creative forces behind another great techno-pop band called Erasure. I am Alan Wojcik, joined by Phil Strom and Kevin Scott. They are, well, Phil is from the Poughkeepsie Journal. Kevin is part of the very nicely done Under the Ring blog, which... yes, it's finally got a home. If you go on PoughkeepsieJournal.com, you'll find it. It looks awesome. You just go there and hit buttons, and next thing you know, it's like, wow. And we're happy to have it that way, and we're happy to have them here to talk now about, yes, the amazing World Wrestling. What the heck was that show last night? They're on their way to Night of Champions, which is December 19th, and we're experiencing the same thing we did, and I'll preface this out real quick before we address it to both Phil and Kevin. We're experiencing a rewind, and I mean it in the effect that you just had a situation at the last pay-per-view where the anonymous general manager announced, or John Cena announced, oh, these are the guys who are going to fight the Nexus, and all right, now you got these are the five people, the four, three, however many other people the anonymous GM announced. And you were supposed to have Sheamus defending the championship versus Wade Barrett, Randy Orton, Edge, Chris Jericho, and your friend and mine, Superman himself, Marky Mark John Cena. Well, you watch Monday Night Raw this past night, and the GM says, okay, cool. You're going to get Justin Gabriel versus John Cena. You're going to get Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett. And you're also going to have on the show Y2J Chris Jericho. I don't call him that anymore. Y2J is old, but hey, Bra is Jericho. Anyway, because we say it is, deal with it. We like Chris Jericho on this show. If you don't, too bad. He's got a new book coming, so buy it. And, of course, the R-rated superstar, rated R superstar, Edge, basically said, if they don't win, you're gone. So, of course, Jericho loses to John Morrison, of all people, and Edge, being the smarter of the two, I guess, beats the Great Khali, of all people, by a countout. So now it's a five-pack challenge to Phil first. What the heck, man? Can we actually just have a pay-per-view match where we know everybody going into this? Is this going to be a situation where we're going to have these five, and then at the pay-per-view, number six is going to walk out?
I don't know who they're going to put in there yet, but I actually viewed the Jericho ouster from the match as a major positive for WWE, because I think that last week when they put him in there and they gave him the caveat of, if I lose, I'm leaving the company, now he's not even in the match, so he can't lose it, which means to me maybe he possibly re-signed within the last week and nobody knows yet, because they took him out of the match so they can actually kill that stipulation now. I mean, that might be, and then they just put Edge in the match just to reinforce the fact that they were just doing it to Jericho for turning on, you know, his teammates the week before. I've said this a million times on my blog. I don't like multiple person matches at all. And six people, four people, whatever it is, like, just do it one-on-one, for goodness sakes. And I think this is just a way to probably switch the title a couple of times around, too. So, you know, hopefully that Jericho deal, hopefully that is what happened, is that he signed and they figured out, like, well, now that he said that already, we need to figure out a creative way to get him out of this match and have him not leave the company. So hopefully that's it, and hopefully we get a couple more years of Chris Jericho out of this.
Well, Kevin, we've had a situation. This isn't the first time we've had a championship defended in a six-pack challenge. You go back to Kurt Angle's time in WWE. I believe it was a six-pack challenge at one point in a Hell in a Cell match. But we can't do that now because October 3rd, we have a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. You're booking this deal. You're in Stephanie McMahon Levesque's ear, and you've got Sheamus and Barrett and Orton and Edge and Cena. Give me a six person that you don't think is going to be booked into anyway. I mean, the Assault Championship match is supposedly on the show, so give me someone that you think should be in this match and why.
Unfortunately, this one's going to be a little difficult because, in all honesty, I have pretty much given up on the WWE.
Uh-oh.
I watch Raw, mostly, you know, DVR, fast forward, SmackDown, which I have, you know, I come out and said that SmackDown is probably the best wrestling show on TV. It's just something I don't want to watch for whatever reason. I don't know if it's, you know, Friday night. I don't know if it's because maybe I'm just not into the rest as much as I would be. You know, since Nick a live show, I rarely follow along. I did see last night for the most part. I look at guys like let's say Randy Orton, Edge. I see them as somebody who should be much higher than they are, not in terms of elevation, but just at this point in their careers, they should be at least true bona fide superstars, maybe not seen a level where obviously, you know, big merchandising machine, but they should be a lot bigger, and I don't understand why. I would say that in terms of the multi-man matches, tournament matches that we always see. It seems to me like lazy writing, where instead of coming up with a solid game plan, okay, here's storyline. We can even have a couple at once where they converge at one point and you get two guys staying at the end who are going to face off for a title. It's pretty much, let's just pick, 5, 6, 8, 10 guys, whatever. Throw them out there, see what sticks, and then whoever's left standing, standing. I really have a hard time, enjoying something like that because it really seems most like a crapshoot.
The champion has no advantage, too. The champion could easily just lose, and it's just a lazy way out of having the champion lose the belt too. I mean,
right.
The champion has no advantage at all. He's like, if wrestling was legitimate, I'm saying, of winning in a six or four man match. That said, I think the most logical person to put in this match is based on recent booking is Heath Slater. He pinned Sheamus last week. He pinned world champion in the tag match.
And he bragged about it big time in the open of the show. You couldn't shut Heath up. You're like, I'm pinned. I'm the Orton, and I'm like, and everybody goes like, Randy, Sheamus' accent is fake, and I'm like, yeah, sure, and they go like, Heath Slater's is fake too, and I'm like, no, I've met Keith Miller in person when he wrestled in SCW. That's the boy's real accent. So,
wow.
Yeah, the best
it's
part.
It's different. It sets him apart.
Yeah, the best part of this show is, as Michael Cole likes to call us, the IWC. We're bad. By the way, we hate you too, Mike. And you're doing your job because we hate your guts, and we'd love to have you on this show one day so we could say it to your face. We're getting our wish. The American Dragon, Daniel Bryan, finally is going to go one-on-one with The Miz for the United States Championship. And are they missing the boat on this? Should this have happened a long time ago, like the way TNA missed the boat with Samoa Joe in the world title a long time ago? Or are they doing this right? Because that promo on Monday was money for The Miz to come out and cut the promo that he did to have the interruption to Daniel Bryan and the magazine cover and all that. We'll go to Phil first, then to Kevin on it. Are you excited to finally see this match? And do you think it will be good on in person as it could be on paper?
I think it's going to be very, very good. I think both of these guys are really hitting on all cylinders right now. I think they probably wanted to do this a long time ago, but obviously with the direction change they had with the Nexus and Daniel Bryan initially being in that, and then obviously what happened with him being out of the company for a couple of months, they didn't have the opportunity to it. So it makes all the sense in the world to go back to it. I thought Miz was just outstanding last night in the interview in the ring. And Daniel Bryan was really good, too. I mean, I'd like to see Daniel Bryan maybe get a win on Raw before he goes for the United States title, since he really hasn't, in the ring, actually beaten anybody yet. But he's pretty much gone over in, like, 2 or 3 segments now. He was, put Alex Riley in the lapel lock, and he's given this huge grin to Miz. And it was just a really, really good ending. I think it's going to be a good match, and I think it's also, if I'm assuming, but they're probably going to move the belt on to Daniel Bryan now because The Miz still has the briefcase, and obviously he looks to be moving up now and not back. So it would make a lot of sense to get that belt off of him so he can kind of pursue the big title now.
Your thoughts on this match, Kevin, going in, especially the way they've been working it on Raw. Is this being done properly, or are you thinking they're going to drop the ball somewhere between now and the 19th?
Well, my pessimism usually goes for they're going to drop the ball. But I would say, one, I'm a huge Bryan Danielson fan. I can't say Daniel Bryan. It's just the hardest thing, WWE. I've been watching for at least, say, 5, 6 years over in our ROH Ring of Honor. And I've always thought he's probably the best in-ring wrestler right now. Seeing him on Raw is very strange in that aspect, also because he is much smaller than many other people, including The Miz, who isn't really that large of a man. But I'm very interested to see what's going to happen with him. And with Miz, I give him full credit. A couple years back, it was something more lines of, I can't believe this guy from MTV Real World is a major star in the WWE. And he's justified his position. He has improved leaps and bounds. His mic work is, I don't want to say it's impeccable, but he's definitely one of the more entertaining, charismatic guys they have. And his in-ring work also has improved tremendously. So I do think that if they're given if they're given the right stage, that they could probably come through with a great match.
And, the other interesting character that's shown up on TV is Oron's Friday Night SmackDown, and that would be the emergence of Alberto Del Rio into the mix as the guy's walking out in matches like he did on Raw and introducing himself, and he's coming out in a car a la JBL, and getting a pretty amazing push here, especially with Rey Mysterio being on. It looks like Rey may be on the shelf again and again and again. Your thoughts on this character, Kevin? Are you digging him? Is he getting over the way he should be, or is this too much too soon for this guy? He should be worked up a little better.
Strangely enough, I'm going to say kind of both. Obviously, there is a reaction. You can see it on the internet. Maybe the crowds. I've seen both where they're, you know, they're into it, and where it's kind of like, okay, who's this guy? I do like what they're doing. Maybe they're trying a little too hard, but at the very least, they're trying something different. So I can't really fault them on that one.
Your thoughts on this guy, Phil? Are you enjoying Alberto Del Rio, or are you like, why did they ever take? Because he wrestled, I believe, if I'm getting him mixed up, I believe he in Mexico was Dos Caras. And a real great hood and everything. And we know how Eric Bischoff feels about masked people. Just check out the Rise and Fall, right? Any WCW book. Is it like a rule now, Phil? Ray Ray is the only masked guy, despite the two down in FCW who wear masks. Your thoughts on Alberto Del Rio?
Well, it makes sense. If you're going to really put over one guy who's a masked guy, to have one guy who's a masked guy, because they really make a killing on those Mysterio masks anyway. I think Alberto Del Rio, yeah, you're right, he was Dos Caras Jr. for about 10 years, I think, in Mexico. He even had an MMA match, if I'm not mistaken, against Miracle Krokop, I think, a couple of years ago, which is even stranger, because he actually fought in the mask. But he's been really, really good, and it's just something new, and like Kevin said, it kind of reminds me of when they debuted MVP. You weren't really sure if he actually had the goods in the ring or not, because he was talking so much. But this guy, you know, he's a 10-year veteran. He seems to be prepared for this role. It's kind of funny that he ever had a mask on, because he's actually a pretty handsome guy, and he's, you know, got a great look. You know, for the character that he's playing, he's been very, very good. I really like the realism that they threw in with his finisher and his MMA background. Now he's doing, like, kind of a jumping, rolling cross-arm breaker. I think that's a really nice touch. And I think he's going to go pretty far as long as he keeps his nose clean. I think he seems to be somebody that they can really, really rely on, and I've really been impressed with him so far. I mean, it's been a very small sample size. I thought it was funny that his second match on SmackDown was against Alex Kosloff, of all people.
Yeah, of all people. It's like, hey, I met that guy at the NWA convention in 2005. He's not Hispanic. He plays a Russian, damn it, but hey.
And he
can only have one Russian.
That.
Yeah, that's pretty fabulous. We're loving every second of him. Speaking of people that got signed and everybody went, huh? Or as Mace has copyrighted, meh? It would appear that Aloisa Isis, whatever the heck her name is, was pulled from appearing in tonight's third season debut of NXT. The official WWE website issued a statement that Vicky Guerrero fired her. The reasons that are being given are kind of shady. There's some risque photos of her. Another is that my cats have more ring time than her. To Phil, since you cover WWE a little more than Kevin, ridiculous fumble here by WWE to sign this girl and not go, yeah, she's tall, but, you know, University of Connecticut's Kara Walters, when she played there, was tall too, but I didn't exactly walk up to Kara and go, hey, you want to play the left field for the Yankees?
I think it was. I don't think it's a bad signing for them at all, especially when you have somebody that enormous that's out there. If you can, train them. I mean, they don't even have to do very much in the ring. I mean, any giant you've ever seen is not going to have to do very much. But that said, it was probably the right call to not use her on this season of NXT, which I'm really interested to see how this works out tonight, because of everybody on that show, I think about one wrestler on that show has more than like 4 or 5 months of experience, and I think if you put some of the guys on at that level of their training, you would be watching a terrible, terrible television show.
And the only go ahead.
I was just going to say to have women's wrestlers in that same spot. I mean, the biggest problem that women's wrestlers always run into, and I've actually talked to a couple of them about this, is just they think they're going to go in and have 6 to 8 minutes in the ring, and that's all well and good if you're prepared to have a 6 to 8 minute match, and then a lot of times before they go through the curtain, it gets shortened to about two or two and a half. Tonight, and for the next 5 weeks, I guess it is after it, these girls are going to have long matches, and that's scary considering the level of experience we're looking at here.
Well, I happen to have the advantage of having Florida Championship Wrestling on my Bright House networks. I wish I had ROH, but they don't have HDNet here, to run it for everybody. And we had Mace, fortunately, on last week, who had watched it reluctantly. I think somebody in Australia put a kiwi to his head and said, watch this man or else. You've got Oksana in there, who was doing a gimmick with Norman Smiley here in Florida, and also was doing something with Abraham Washington. The current Divas champ in FCW is Naomi Knight, so she's actually a former Orlando Magic dancer, I believe. And then you have Liviana, who is actually the current general manager of FCW here in Florida. Jamie Keys, I believe, is the ring announcer on NXT. And I don't remember, and I think she's also the ring announcer here in FCW. The only one that I actually can say I've seen on a consistent basis is AJ, also known as AJ Lee, also known as Miss April, from Wrestling Superstar, Women's Superstars Uncensored, Sean McCaffrey's promotion out of Jersey. So my question to Kevin, without having him have to require to be seeing this show, would you have rather have seen them just shelve NXT and put these girls in a situation? Because Mason Spugg called it Diva Search 2010.
Right.
Would you rather have seen this, Kevin, packaged into SmackDown when it goes to Sci-Fi October 1st, or just have this WWE.com based, or is this just WWE filling their contract? You got till October 1st to get this show on. You got Tuesday night. Use it. Which one would you like to choose?
I would choose either do it with SmackDown or even the website, which actually the website probably would be my number one pick. It clearly seems to me that this is all about filling a contract with Sci-Fi. And like I said, with in terms of people being green or not really rated for the ring, I watch TNA. I'm used to that. Come on, let's be honest here. There's a whole bunch of
Rob Terry.
I didn't say Rob Terry's name, but yeah. But there's also a huge issue with, say, the Knockout division, where there's probably more than a few who really should never, ever step in a ring and pretend to wrestle. So on that terms, like in terms of maybe they're too green to actually be doing, especially trying to pull off something like 8, 10, hopefully not even more than that minute match, it's going to be awful. It's going to be embarrassing. It will be pretty much the Diva Search all over again, where I don't know how, but they found a way to make half-naked women really annoying to watch. You gotta give them credit for that. Wrestling fans couldn't stand the sight of half naked women on their TV.
That's some scary stuff. Speaking of some scary stuff, this network is fans of a lot of stuff. The guys on Wrestle Talk Radio, such as Spug, has actually trained for MMA. And John Cena apparently is not a big fan of him. He took part in an interview with the Boston Globe recently. I believe it was also to hype his limited release film Legendary that's coming out this Friday, if you're lucky to find it somewhere. And he had to say this about it, and I don't do a John Cena impression, so I'm just going to have to read the quick blurbs that were in his column. It is what it is. It can be pretty over the top, and it's not something I'd want my children to watch. It's just not something that particularly interests me. UFC is where boxing was a year ago, and I was never into boxing either. He also added to say he preferred pro wrestling because regulated entertainment that's safe for everyone to enjoy. This is a company that just had one of their worst pay-per-view buys ever for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. To Kevin, then to Phil, what's he doing, man? Don't, that's like sticking a stick to Dana White and poking him going, you want to talk, Dana? Dana, come on, Dana. Here, Dana. Come on, Dana. Is this guy crazy?
I look at it, the same way that, Eric Bischoff's comments about UFC have been lately. They realize that it's much more than just a real competitor to them. UFC embarrasses professional wrestling in terms of both presenting a maybe not the greatest show every time out, but it's actually worthwhile. The fans who put their money out rarely walk away from it saying, okay, that was a disappointment. They do have their shows where you sit in there and it might have not been everything that you hoped for. But at the very least, they have the advantage of it, you know, hate to say it, but being legitimate. You can actually look at it from a sporting aspect, which makes it different from wrestling, obviously, but it also gives it a little bit more emotional involvement on that end. Anything about where boxing was a year ago? I have no idea where he's coming from that, because boxing has been a joke outside of the, you know, occasional Mayweather fight, which still somewhat of a joke. And UFC has done nothing but grown tremendously over the past couple of years, mainly due to Ultimate Fighter. So I really don't know if he was just trying to show that they're not really worried about it, because they obviously are. You're talking about it.
Go ahead, Phil. Do you buy any of this?
If John Cena, the person, just doesn't watch MMA, I mean, clearly the interviewer is trying to get him to go in a direction because MMA is something that's hot right now. If he doesn't watch it, he doesn't watch it. I mean, it's not really, I mean, he probably does, you know, so many of these interviews in a day, and they're just like, well, what do you think about UFC? And it's just like, well, if he really doesn't care, if he really doesn't watch it, I don't watch football. If somebody's going to ask me about football in an interview, I'm not really going to know what I'm talking about. So, you know, the bottom line is, if he's not a fan, he's not a fan. And you can't really fault the guy for that. I mean, he also knows, I mean, he's well aware that it's, you know, it's competition for his company right now. So it makes no sense for him to really, really, you know, put it over, I guess, to an extent. But I didn't really have a problem with anything he said. It was, you know, it was just, I didn't really know why he was being asked about MMA. I mean, he's got nothing to do with MMA.
Speaking of people not liking to put over certain products, if you happen to be hitting the theaters recently and went to go see Going the Distance with Justin Long and Drew Barrymore, he's not a fan of yours if you're a wrestling fan. He was doing some pub after his August 16th appearance on Monday Night Raw, and this is what he had to say, and this is actually to metronews.ca. In no way am I bringing self-deprecating when I say it was a disaster. It was just not the audience to be promoting a movie like that, too. We are so out of place, it was just awkward. They're all fired up to see guys pummeling each other, not out to see three nerdy comedy guys doing some bits. They played the trailer for this crowd, and it just silenced them, not in a good way. Long continued saying that the crowd in Los Angeles looked like they were ready to attack him and his fellow co-hosts, Charlie Day and Jason Sudeikis. Sorry if I got his name wrong. I'm sure his publicist will be writing us tomorrow. Quote from Long, "We were in Los Angeles at the Staples Center, and the only time we really had the audience on our side was when we were praising the Lakers. And before that, I think the majority of them were contemplating throwing things at us. There were a few homophobic remarks. I don't want to generalize it. I know some of the wrestling fans, but it's just not the audience." This isn't the first time WWE has done this, and we welcome into our show one of the voices of this network. He's involved with Otaku Talk Live on Wednesdays and also World Talk Radio, and as a freaking contributor, the Spug Guy is joining us here. This isn't the first time, Spug, Phil, and Kevin, that we've had this kind of thing. I mean, they had the A-Team cast on where Bradley Cooper walked out and said, "Hi, go see the movie," and then disappeared the rest of the night. Jeremy Piven probably had one of the worst appearances on the show when he was promoting the goods. So we'll go to Spug first, since he's graciously given some of his time to us. Justin Long right or wrong in saying, why the heck did you even get us here, but we'll take your money?
I suppose. I'm pretty sure Jeremy Piven wanted to say the same thing after his appearance, but I heard the words UFC.
Does yeah.
Punk have to choke somebody?
Hey, hey, hey. That would be John Cena who is ripping it, not us.
No, I was listening and heard the words UFC, and I'm like, no, I better call in.
Uh-oh. Are we all getting spanked with the paddle of doom?
No. That's my wife okay. later.
Whoa, hey now.
No, here's the thing. John Cena has no right to talk about family entertainment or well-regulated family entertainment because, quite honestly, mixed martial arts is more regulated than any sport on the planet. And it's for the simple fact that you are using 4-ounce gloves. There is literally 3/4 of an inch to an inch worth of padding between your fist and another guy's face. They don't use any padding on their feet. They don't use any padding on their knees. And they don't use any padding on their elbows. The ring doesn't have a spring in the center of it. There are no elastic ropes. There are no padded turnbuckles. It's chain link and plywood and canvas. So the next time John Cena wants to open his mouth about well-regulated and family entertainment, perhaps you should look at the February pay-per-view called Elimination Chamber, or the October pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell.
Or the movies that he's had out. 12 Rounds wasn't exactly a Christmas Carol movie, and neither was The Marine. I mean, it's just a little awkward to have him spouting the company line of, oh, UFC bad. Don't mind that Jim Ross is going to these things, and Steve Austin is going to these things, and Bill Goldberg, and Undertaker, and everyone's going to these shows. So it's just a little weird to hear Cena come out and say something like that.
Or the fact that one of your champions is now probably the best heavyweight fighter on the planet. And I know I'm boring your contributors for the week because obviously they don't give a damn about UFC, but...
I'm a fan.
Hey, we actually both watch it, I think.
Well, good. And Alan said, I trained. I'm training. There's a difference.
I apologize.
I'm in the process of training. My first fight was supposed to be in October, and now it has been pushed back to February due to medical reasons.
As opposed to James Toney, who walked out there and 45 seconds later, it's like, I just got the snot beat out of me.
That
was awful.
I don't care.
It was a squash match.
I don't care who you are. That was actually a really good fight for the UFC and for boxing. But that's a topic for a different show. But anyway.
Absolutely. We're actually going to talk about your man crush. I'm glad you called in because check this out, kids. Triple H may not ever be hitting back to the ring because WWE headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut is undergoing a slight renovation as an office is being built for, that's right, Triple H, also known as Paul Levesque, who was recently promoted to an executive role within the organization. According to company sources, and I confirm this with the company sources, but I'm not telling you who they are, the multi-time wrestling champion now officially serves as WWE Chairman Vince McMahon's creative advisor. Now, Triple H obviously has had the ear of Vince in the past, always in an official capacity. Doesn't hurt that he's granddad to 3. So, to Spug, since this is your man, does this bother you at all that he's now going to basically, him and Steph basically have creative control over everybody's destiny?
No, not one bit. Not one bit, and I'll tell you why. Because finally, a wrestling person has creative control over wrestling. Someone who understands the business and understands what's supposed to happen.
Well, to Kevin, does this bother you at all? I mean, he's got a good slot. I mean, it's not like the guy sucks in the ring. It's not like taking, Gilbert and saying, Gilbert, come on in, dude. You're gonna sit next to Vince McMahon here and be the creative advisor. At least, like Spug is saying, the guy's been in the business for more than a decade and has been on top and knows what it takes to get on top. So, Kevin, bad or good that we've got Triple H helping out?
It's always a double-edged sword in terms of, yes, obviously he has a mind for the business. He's been around for a while. He obviously has, I don't want to go into backstage politics, but he knows what's going on. At the, on the other side of things, that it's also very hard for said wrestler to keep an unbiased look upon things. You're always going to have your friends. You're always going to have your associates. You're going to have people that you might consider enemies. You don't get along. And, I really don't put in too much stock into, you know, internet talk in terms of, oh, this person did this to who. But there has been stuff in the past where maybe Triple H might not have the actual business, at the forefront of his thinking. It could go personal. I would hope not. I imagine that Triple H would do a decent job with a position he actually will be fulfilling. But it, like I said, it could go either way, and really have to see what happens. You have to give him a chance before he can actually criticize.
Your thoughts on this, Phil? Good or bad, Triple H being uncreative?
If he's not wrestling, I don't have a problem with it. It's very difficult a lot of times for, you know, a lot of times in history, promoters have been wrestlers themselves. And, you know, the innate nature is just to either push yourself or your family members and stuff like that. We all know that Triple H was going to put some power down the line anyway. Vince McMahon, despite rumors to the contrary, is not going to last forever. Triple H and Stephanie are going to be in power because Stephanie has already been the head of creative for like 5 years. And Triple H, you know, he's been around the business for like 16, 17 years now. Vince is on his youth kick right now. He's going with everybody that's not over 40, which is actually the opposite of what TNA is doing. Triple H is either 40 now or getting to be older. As he's starting to get older, you're going to see him probably have more of a role in the, you know, the wrestling end of things. And I think it's probably going to end up being a positive because he is somebody that watched wrestling in the 70s and 80s. And he knows, you know, he counts among his favorites Harley Race and Ric Flair. He knows what good wrestling looks like. He knows what bad wrestling looks like. As long as it's not him booking him, I don't think it's going to be much of a problem. I don't know how good he is as that creative, but I do like what Spud said too, in that, you know, it's somebody, you know, you can have all the creative writers you want in the world, but what we found with pro wrestling is that sometimes that's not enough. It's okay to, you know, I don't really have a great problem with scripting the promos because they do need a little bit of control over that anyway, and that's fine. But you do need a wrestling person in there to kind of act as quality control. And if Hunter is, you know, is acting as quality control over the wrestling product, then I don't have a problem with that.
Online World of Wrestling Radio, joined by Phil Strom and Kevin Scott of Under the Ring, Spug from Wrestle Talk Radio, and unfortunately we're going to go into the blotter section of the show and also the Robert Downey Jr. Memorial section of this show. We were expecting just to talk about one heart, and we'll get to the other one in a second, because oh baby is he in deep crap. Let's talk about Teddy Hart, his youngest wrestler to ever sign to a WWE contract. He recently entered a Texas area rehab center on behalf of his former employer, World Wrestling Entertainment. And how's this for funny? He's in the same facility as Hey Yo. That's right. Oh. Him and Scott Hall are in the same joint. Hart is claiming that he entered the rehab center at the urging of his uncle, Hall of Famer Bret the Hitman Hart, who said that if successfully completes the center's program, he would put in a good word for WWE to give him another shot. Now, apparently, during his last run with AAA in Mexico, Hart managed to unite the entire locker room against him due to his reputation of changing match finishes and spots to put himself over. His mentality is to perform as many flashy maneuvers as possible whenever that makes sense or not. We'll put this into perspective for both Phil and Kevin, because we're New Yorkers. Hideki Irabu comes to mind. Ryan Taylor comes to mind as a Yankee. Unless he actually comes back and joins WWE to fill in to Kevin and then around the Spug, is he the biggest bust in wrestling history?
Steve Howe comes to mind, too, I would say,
from a
New York perspective. All the second chances and everything like that, he's now no longer with us, too. But Teddy Hart is, honestly, just physically one of the most talented guys I've ever seen wrestle. I got a chance to see him wrestle back in the weekly days of TNA, and also I saw him wrestle live on a Ring of Honor show probably about 7 years ago. He just can't get out of his own way. He always has to do things his own way. You know, would you think when your grandfather is Stu Hart, your uncles are Bret and Owen and the Bulldog and everybody else, it's amazing to me that he's really never gotten a shot at on a major company, but it's not amazing to me when I read about what he does. You know, obviously if he's having some problems, you know, hopefully he gets through whatever he's getting through while he's in the rehab right now. But I'm not sure how much that's going to change just the way he looks at himself and the way he looks at the business. You're not going to find too many guys that are, you know, just better in the ring overall than this guy. He's just an amazing, amazing athlete. But pro wrestling is about trusting yourself and about trusting the other guy. And obviously if one of those things isn't happening, then Teddy Hart in the WWE is probably not going to be happening either.
All right, Kevin, is this guy the biggest bust in wrestling history, or are you really, like I said, when I mentioned Robert Downey Jr., because you're rooting for someone like Robert Downey Jr. to come back and have the career he's had. We've seen flashes of Teddy being good. He was a part of Team Canada originally way back in TNA when they did the World X Cup in Nashville. Is he the biggest bust, or are you hoping that he would actually come back?
At this point in time, I feel it's too late. I actually got to meet Teddy after an indie show probably 2004 or so out here in Long Island. And, you know, so it was a very small show. After everything was over, he talked to a couple of the fans that stayed around and everything. Came across as a very down-to-earth, genuine person. I remember this was sometime around where the Ring of Honor incident happened, where there was supposed to be, you know, this huge cage match, and he's doing flips off the top afterwards, totally killing, you know, the whole idea that he just went through this I can't think of the right word I'm trying to find.
Grueling,
thank you. Fred, grueling match. It's just a shame. In terms of maybe the biggest bust, I would say possibly if you look at maybe recently departed Trent Acid. He would, unfortunately, you know, obviously with his passing, be a little bit more of, say, a waste of talent. But with Teddy, it's just a matter of maybe it's the ego coming from the family he does with his pedigree he has. Maybe it's just that he, you know, whatever the problem he does have with substance abuse, something's not clicking there. I don't know why it's taken this long for him to actually get help, because I know that there's been things in the past where people have come to him saying, look, you really have to think about what you want in terms of a career. This is not just you know, a hobby of yours. If you really want to do this, you have to take it seriously. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't happened. Like I said, with Robert Downey Jr., yes, he had a very long period where he was pretty much a joke. And everyone around him just, you know, like, okay, whatever, he's the guy's gonna be drinking, doing drugs. And he almost became something that, unfortunately was, very laughable in terms of, well, that's how Robert Downey Jr. is, that's how Gary Busey is, those kind of things. And then you saw what did happen, the past couple years of Downey's career. I just don't see a happy ending for Teddy Hart, unfortunately. I think, it's just way too much has happened that it's just not gonna end up well.
Before we go to Spud, let me follow up real quick what you mentioned about meeting Teddy in 2004. He was here in Florida for the 2004 Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup event, which I'm really hoping and praying is going to happen this year. And in between the two shows on the Saturday, they did an afternoon show and an evening show, he plopped himself down in front of the RF video table and popped in his own chute. And he said, I'm sitting there and I'm going, why is Teddy watching himself? And somebody come over to me and says, he was watching it because he doesn't remember it because he was stoned out of his mind when he did it. So,
wow.
Spug, is he the biggest bust you can think of, or is this hopefully Teddy getting smacked around by his uncle Bret Hart going, you don't fix this, you're done. Your shots are all used up. Would you like to see Teddy Hart actually in WWE, Spunk?
No, because the Leopard doesn't change his spots.
Because no, unfortunately, he was supposed to be in Hart Foundation 2.0 or Hart Dynasty. I met him in FCW when they started. He was supposed to be the third guy with Natalya and TJ and Harry.
Well, if you listen to this network, you already know my feelings on the Hart family and on Brett and everybody in general. But I will say this. He had an enormous amount of talent, but somebody that is that young, that stupid, and ego-driven doesn't change themselves, rehab or not.
Well, someone that hasn't changed due to rehab is another uncle who would be former WWE Tag Team Champion and father of Natty Neidhart, Jim Neidhart. While we were watching the TNA Wrestling pay-per-view and then the subsequent Russell Talk Radio, Tony O in the chat room messages Tim Stein and Sorokin and goes, go to this thing. And all of a sudden they're hitting me up and they're like, you're in Tampa, find this out, tell me this is legit. Yeah, Jim the Anvil Neidhart made news. He was arrested earlier Sunday and charged with 2 counts of a controlled substance, 2 counts in trafficking a controlled substance, 1 count of burglary of an occupied dwelling, and 1 count of grand theft, which was $300 to $5,000. Neidhart was arrested after deputies were alerted to him being loud and yelling as he was attempting to pump gas at a gas station on Fletcher Avenue in the Thonatsasasa area of Tampa and had an open pill bottle. He was apparently argumentative with the police, leading them to patting him down and finding 28 methadone tablets and 95 OxyContin tablets. Now, several pill bottles were found in his possession, and actually, according to reports from TVR.com and WTVT, which is the Fox 13 station, belonged to a neighbor he had stolen it from. He did appear before a judge yesterday and was posted with a $130,000 bond. So I don't know if Jim the Anvil is going to be getting out anytime soon. That the affiliate on Fox was reporting that some of the alleged death victims knew Neidhart, but had not given him permission to take the medications. He is listed as a self-employed entertainer on his arrest record. And as of today, if you go to the Hillsborough County website, you can see him, and that's one scary-looking dude. To Phil, since you're part of a major newspaper, the Poughkeepsie Journal, talk about somebody falling from grace, but this is someone who, I mean, I'm old enough to remember it, Spug maybe, I don't know about you guys, but this isn't the first time Jim Neidhart's run into trouble with the law. He apparently assaulted a Southwest Airlines stewardess, which got outlined by Honky Tonk Man. Speaking of KFM commentaries, get the 1987 DVD and Honky Tonk Man. I'll tell you an interesting story about Jim Neidhart. Sad is the only thing I can think of, Phil, to address this situation. He was one of the top guys of the 80s and early 90s, and now a resident of Hillsborough County jails.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to meet Jim Neidhart last year. He did an autograph signing at Collector's Realm over at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie with Bret Hart. You know, I spoke to him for about 10 minutes. He's a very nice guy. Pretty much the opposite of what you would see on TV, or at least he was that day. He's had a lot of drug problems in the past. They're very well documented in Bret Hart's biography, Hitman, going through a lot of his history. And, he seemed fine, the day that I met him. He was very, very outgoing and very, you know, all he really wanted to talk about was, you know, I asked him, what are you doing these days? And he said, I'm playing a lot of golf. He said, my short game stinks, but he's like, I'm driving the ball great. And I was like, you look at him, he's 275 pounds. So of course he's going to have plenty of power in his golf swing. But, it was very sad to hear about that. Obviously he still has some addiction problems, and, you know, addiction problems specifically with the stuff that he was getting caught with, OxyContin and methadone, you know, and, you know, a lot of that stuff can lead to the other stuff that he got involved with. I mean, you know, Jim Ross said it best on his blog. He was like, Jim Neidhart's not a burglar. You know, it's like you do things out of character when you're getting involved with that kind of stuff. And you just hope, you know, and WWE's been very, very good about this in the past with a lot of their performers, and specifically since they have one of his children under contract right now. I think they're going to take care of Jim Neidhart when his legal stuff gets taken care of, because they don't like, you know, they do follow up on a lot of these guys when they get in trouble in terms of, you know, addiction and stuff like that. I know Matt Borden's been through it. I know Scott Hall's been through it. You know, a lot of the guys, and Jake Roberts, who actually spoke to me about the experience a couple of weeks ago, they really do step up to these guys, and hopefully after going through whatever he goes through in the court system, hopefully the WWE will help him out with that, would actually be the help that he really needs.
Your thoughts on him, Kevin? Were you a Hart Foundation guy back in the day, or were you like, I can't stand that dude?
I was a huge Hart Foundation fan. I've always loved Bret Hart, and I think my uncle, Uncle Bobby, was a huge Neidhart fan. So we really bonded over that. It's sad. Like I said, it's just, you look at all the guys that I've grown up with, whether, you know, going back to the old instance with Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Iron Sheik, you see how things happen for a guy like Jake Nick Roberts, who, once again, I saw an indie show quite recently, a couple years back, and the experience of meeting him at that point, was just horrific. It was something that I wish I never met the guy. And granted, I know he had problems. It wasn't a big shock to me, but his obvious, let's say he was under the influence, to say the least. His behavior towards the fans was just disgusting, and it was embarrassment overall. Something like with Neidhart, it's just one of those black marks on the sport that you love. You know, you don't want to compare it to, say, the Benoit situation, but there was a lot of things where it has a lot to do with each other. I wish that they would do something. I'm not blaming McMahon or anybody else, but you just wish that they'd be able to do something to get these guys help they need. And I do realize that they have tried. They've definitely put it out there, and they have done wonders for some people, but it's just that it keeps happening all the time.
And unfortunately, Spug, this isn't an unfamiliar topic. We've addressed substance abuse on this program and other ones on the network. Your overall thoughts on Jim Neidhart?
It's sad, but quite honestly, how are we not going to expect it, especially coming from the era that he came from? You look at guys like... You look at guys like Piper, and you go into the 90s with Louis Piccoli and so on and so forth. How do you not expect that with the schedule that they used to run and the amount of days that they were on the road and the amount that they wrestled? Drug issues and drug abuse was just a part of life, and they're not in that lifestyle anymore, but the drug abuse and drug issues are still there. You know, you just don't get rid of them. It's not like a gimmick where you turn it on and turn it off.
On that note, we're actually going to let everybody go ahead and go. Before they disappear, we want to thank Phil and Kevin for giving us their time. As we mentioned, Phil, before you go, how influential were you in getting this attached to the Poughkeepsie Journal site? Because you used to have to go to Pojo Slam and all this other stuff, and now it's like, hey, look, it's on the site. Did you do that, or who was it, the fans doing it? What's going on?
No, it's something that the Journal wanted to do for a while. They switched their servers over from Blogger over to WordPress now, which just makes it a lot easier for them to promote their blogs and get advertising on them and everything like that. So every blog on the Poughkeepsie Journal is now on the blogs.poughkeepsiejournal.com site, which you can also get it from there. You know, we're still tinkering around with, I'm not used to WordPress, to be honest with you. They're just tinkering around with the look. I mean, we have a guy who's, his nickname is Money, who takes care of all of our graphics, and he's really, really good. So hopefully we're going to get a nice under the ring banner up there soon. I'm really liking the change so far. It's been really good. And we've got some pretty cool stuff, coming up, and we've had some pretty cool stuff lately. So hopefully everybody, checks it out.
It is blogs.poughkeepsiejournal.com/under the ring. Thanks to both Phil and Kevin. You can see Kevin's info. He talks about TNA on their site. You can find both of them on Facebook. They are friends of ours on Facebook. The Spug guy is claiming he's got a Twitter for me, but it doesn't exist. It's all lies.
We're on Twitter, too. I'm on Twitter.
Oh, you are? Promote. Promote the twit, even though Kenny King told me I don't need one.
Twitter.com/under the ring.
All right, on the way out from the Violator album, this is Halo on Depeche Mode Night on Light World of Wrestling Radio. When we come back, the guru of kayfabe commentary is Sean Oliver on Light World of Wrestling Radio.
This is Sir Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kind of did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer, I am the host of this
show. Oh my god, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday nights, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show! So tune in! Listen! I demand it.
If you're looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions, as well. There are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Welcome back to our second hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio here on the Wild Talk Radio Network for this wonderful September 7th evening here. And we're going to take things to a totally different light. The gentleman that you're about to hear talk with us normally is the one that's asking the questions. He's faced off against some of the biggest names in the wrestling business, including two of the most recent releases by his company, Kayfabe Commentaries, involving TNA President Dixie Carter and the legendary manager of the Midnight Express, Mr. Jim Cornette. He is the owner of Kayfabe Commentaries LLC, which is kayfabecommentaries.com, and we are very honored that we get to talk with Sean Oliver. Good evening and welcome to the show, sir.
Alan, you have my express permission to call this You Shoot with Sean Oliver, okay?
All right. We're You Shooting with Sean Oliver, but we won't have any, we won't have anybody with Maria Kanellis' Playboy over their head doing stuff like that. We'll get to that DVD in a minute, because that was, that DVD got actually played around my in-laws, who aren't even wrestling fans, who saw in Celebrity Apprentice, and were like, yeah, you can fast forward through all that stuff, but let's get to the Apprentice part. Biggest questions that I always get asked when I have your DVDs around at wrestling shows and when I travel is, what was your initial introduction into the wrestling business before Kayfabe Commentaries even came to being? Because you're a Northeast guy. I'm guessing from the way a lot of the interviews are structured, the talent always seems to feel that you're a Northeast guy. So go into your background for us and how Kayfabe came to be in existence, the company, not the word.
Well, I was just, I was a fan. I was a fan my whole life since the 70s. I am a Northeast guy, so I grew up on a steady diet of black and white televised early morning and late night matches from Vince McMahon Sr.'s product. And that spawned a lifelong interest in wrestling. You know, like any lover, you fall in and out of love a few times. The Goon, the Gobbledygooker, that whole era, I was, you know, those were my college years, so I was, you know, tied up with my pursuits of being an artiste, a filmmaker, an actor, all that stuff, the other stuff that I do. But I always retained that love for the mysterious and wonderful world of wrestling that I grew up on. Now, of course, the curtain's been drawn back on kayfabe, no pun intended. So I don't know what the draw is now for a kid to watch it. I guess it's just, you know, seeing big guys fly around a lot, and then they're on Jay Leno talking about their character. Well, that didn't happen when I got intrigued, when I was enthralled by it. I thought, damn, if I ran into Superstar Graham on the street, he might be wearing that boa, and he might be that outrageous and that much of a heel to me. You know, that. So I was hooked. And my involvement in the wrestling business prior to kayfabe was nothing. My business partner called me one time. I was working, this was about 4 years ago now, I was working on the cusp of finance, is what I call it, down on Wall Street. And called me and said, hey, you know what's never been done? And that conversation gave birth to our first product, which was a line of downloadable MP3 audio commentaries for wrestling matches. We couldn't sell the video of the Iron Sheik versus Hulk Hogan because Vince owns it. But we could bring in the Sheik, and we could put him on a headset with me and both watch the match and in real time talk about what's going on there. And that's what we did. And we sold them on the website, $3 a match. And when you deal with a niche audience like professional wrestling, not even, it's a niche of a niche. I mean, professional wrestling's a niche, and then the sub-niche is the smart fan, to use a totally annoying term, but those that some insight into the inner workings of the business that would pay for a product like that, you realize that in order for a company to survive, you need to make some money, and so we needed to up the ante and get into video. And then the first video concept that we launched with was Guest Booker. And we just kind of naturally came at the business from a different angle. We have more of an entertainment business background, but we're lifelong wrestling fans. So the mold that we began to create for ourselves was not so much in the vein of the other shoot interview companies that were out there, but rather
more of a traditional entertainment company, dare I say even a television network, where we can have multiple series that kind of satisfy different areas of a viewer's palate. You know, you like the historical tribute stuff, we have Timeline for you. You like the wild stuff with shirtless guys sending in videos, we have You Shoot. And so I think that's what appealed to our fans early on, that we were kind of different. The focus on production, on well-crafted written programs, as opposed to a list of questions, which was mostly what was out there from other companies. And I think the talent began to appreciate working with us. And I think word started to spread a little bit about us, so our requests were often welcomed. And not only that, we began getting more requests from the talent and their agents than we could even handle. Because we want to keep it to, you know, 12 to 14 releases a year is a comfortable output for us.
So you're not going to be like an RF where you're recording like 7 or 8 in 1 month or a day or whatever ROH has done. You're not trying to do that because your website lays it out very well that this is the next release for September, this is October, November, December. The goal was never to just oversaturate your marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to... We have a lot of fans that buy every monthly release. And $20 a month is a huge compliment in this economy, certainly. But anytime. Considering that these wrestling fans are probably dropping $40-$50 on pay-per-views, and there are other wrestling DVDs by the big two that get put out that they're going to be buying as well. So that's a huge compliment that we have as much repeat business as we do. There are times we have to double up, to be very honest with you. If we have to push a timely release out, then we would have to double up in a month. But we certainly don't want to have a lot of $40 months for people.
Sean Oliver, Kayfabe Commentary, is joining us on Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you the Wild Talk Radio Network. You mentioned the setup of the series. We'll take the guest booker series first. And as you mentioned, Raven being the non-wrestler of the group, take us through, for fans that have never seen it, and if you haven't seen it, you need to surrender a man card right now, because where have you been for the last 4 years? Just break down for a fan, without going into each and every person that you've had on, because I'll run them real fast, the concept of guest booker.
Concept of guest booker is a study of wrestling's creative mind. And by creative mind, we mean anyone that had the pencil in a wrestling territory. Somebody that was responsible for the storylines and the decision making. They were called bookers, kids. Today they're called writers. We'll take either and put them on guest booker. But it is a study of their creative mind. Something people enjoy, and the series kind of got hijacked by the fact that we do a real world booking exercise with that booker, where we give them a scenario in which they weren't involved and just hear how they would have handled the booking of that real-world scenario. Now, that exercise kind of became the identity of the series, so much so that some people have judged titles in the guest booker series based, whether they liked it or not, or whether it was a good or bad release, based on what the booker did. And
what?
That always got me... Well, absolutely. I could email you reviews where they said, yeah, you know, mediocre release. I don't think that ever would have happened. Missing the point that if the History Network did a series about the U.S. presidents, you couldn't judge the John F. Kennedy episode as being good or bad based on the policy that they describe him having enacted. It's the study of the booker's mind. It's an accurate description. If the booker could not come up with anything that you thought was realistic or believable or entertaining, then we have done our job by showing that Booker maybe does not have the muscle that Booker B did in the previous month's release. So I would say for anyone that hasn't seen the series, we do an exercise where the Booker does kind of flex his muscles for you. You know, an example I used recently was if I was doing basketball and I was doing the great stars of basketball, we're going to sit down with Michael Jordan for 2 hours and we're going to talk about technique and we're going to talk about what it's like to shoot a ball. And then toward the end, he's going to stand up and walk us through a couple of his favorite shots out on the court. It's not about the game. It's about the process and the creative process in pro wrestling, the very thing that makes it not television, not entertainment, and also not sports. There's nothing in the world like pro wrestling. It can't be gauged according to television and according to traditional entertainment, which is Vince's big mistake. I say Vince, everyone up in all the monkeys in Connecticut. Their big mistake now is they want to be put on par and judged and compared with traditional entertainment. It's nothing like, on the flip side, it's not traditional sport. You can't, in this day and age, have somebody calling the match like they did in 1982, where what we're seeing is acceptable sport on par with the volleyball game that'll be on following this.
For fans that, as mentioned, haven't seen it, you need to get a life in the DVD. You had some pretty cool legends on here. The late Gary Hart rebooked World Class. Raven rebooked the ECW of 96 with Hall and Nash coming in. You've had Kevin Sullivan on, who rebooked World Wrestling Federation 1984 minus Hulk Hogan. Gabe Sapolsky rebooked ECW version whatever the WWE one was being. Jim Cornette rebooked the WCW Invasion. Sheephitter Luke rebooked WWE 93 as Hardcore. Jerry Jarrett rebooked WCW 2000. Yeah, J.J. Dillon on talking about writing for wrestling television, Greg Gagne with the Pro Wrestling USA. And the one release that we've actually talked about through emails was the Mike Graham episode where he was supposed to rebook the Crockett Championship Wrestling from Florida merger. And friends of mine, people in the industry, always felt that was the weakest one because Mike never really got to the booking thing. Was that something that you tried to correct in that thing, or you just said, there's nothing we can do here, let's just go ahead and release this episode?
Put it to you this way. first of all, to defend the release a little, I think there was enough up front about Florida, about Eddie, about the time period, about the Crockett CWF situation, that it was releasable and was able to stand on its own. But simply put, had I released his attempt to rebook anything on video, it would have been a far worse release than what you have right now.
Oh, wow. Go ahead.
I'm not shooting on Mike. I like Mike, and Mike was very honest when we sat down and started to shoot that segment of it when he said, I can't do this. I can't do it. And we tried to help him along. We tried to coach it a little. But when it began to look like it was us booking it out of his mouth, I said, well, let's do a very long discussion about the talent you would use and how you would use them, and let's wrap it up there. That's the truth.
That's understandable, especially if you're not used to doing it. The biggest challenge you've had is the fact that that little office in Connecticut owns everything. And that leads to the Ringside series that you've had Big Van Vader as a guest, Demolition, and then we had Bill After on the show to address the Terry Funk program. Success or failure, in your opinion, on the product that you put out?
I'd say a deformed child would be an accurate description. Something worthy of life, but one maybe that would not excel to the limits of one's brother and sister. You know, I can't show you the matches, and we wanted to do a take on the traditional shoot interview where, you know, Alan, one of the things that would drive me crazy in watching other shoot interviews before we got in the business, I would get a DVD because I wanted to hear, I don't know, I'll be arbitrary, Lex Luger talk about the night he walked out onto Nitro, okay? Because that period in his life is a big headline when you sift through the files of his life. It's a big headline. It's something that stands out. And it would often be addressed and glossed over in one sentence. And I wanted to take somebody who had a storied wrestling career, had touched a bunch of different territories, and just zoom into 8 or 10 matches from their career and deal with them intensely. We talk about the match, but also the promoter, the person they're in the ring with, that particular territory. You mentioned the Terry Funk disc. You know, we covered the first half of his life. It would have been a double disc had we covered everything Terry did. But we did the first half. We did the NWA years, the WWF years. We just stopped shy of the ECW years. So we covered Japan and Abby and Hogan and all the names pre-ECW from Terry Funk, because I wanted to take the 2 hours we were with the talent to just zoom in on a few of the important things. So I think from that standpoint, the series succeeds. Where I think the series never did reach its potential was the fact that I think a lot of people could not get past the fact, and perhaps rightfully so, I don't know, I'm a little too close to it to judge my children, but I think people couldn't get past the fact that they were looking at the back of a monitor. We tried to get around it. I when I was the host, and then Bill when we hired him, I tried to have them bring it in and out of the on-screen stuff as much as possible. If you go to something specific on screen, make sure it's very easy to understand and doesn't need a lot of explanation what's going on screen at the time. But then let's bring it out real quick again and talk about the build-up to the match and some promos that were shot, whatever. We tried to dress the set kind of like a funny old-school kayfabe era announce table with the old microphone pads and stuff, and just tried to do something visually interesting to distract from the fact that, you know, Alan, don't all shoot interview companies put this much thought into their product? Don't they?
I wish. Maybe they do. I don't know.
Don't they? Anyway, so we tried.
They stick a banner up behind and go, "We're here."
Maybe they do. Maybe I'm thinking of a different industry.
And they just went a shot at having RF on the show.
Oh, come on. He's a good guy. Anyway, So we tried to do something visually interesting, maybe to take away from the fact that there is a big black monitor there. We didn't want to go with anything too sleek and nondescript because the announce tables from the kayfabe era with the big fuzzy orange and red microphones were big old school monitors like that. So, I don't know, maybe the concept was damned, perhaps. I think we're done with Ringside for now. We have a lot of exciting new stuff, new series that are going to be launching. I guess first quarter 2011, what with House Show, which is coming, and some other fun stuff.
One of the releases that I did enjoy on a personal level was your My Side of the Story. You did two releases. One was Tito Santana and Greg the Hammer Valentine, and the other was Magnum TA and Nikita Koloff. Talk us through just getting these guys together. And the average reaction I got from the Magnum TA Nikita Koloff disc was, holy cow, he's from Minnesota? I was like, yeah, guys, hello, this is called wrestling.
that was my favorite series when we launched it. I think that, again, it was maybe a little too high concept for the shoot interview world at the time. Maybe if we ever relaunched it, it would work better now. Don't know. But it was getting too... I'll tell you the genesis of the whole series. My wife, we have a daughter, and my wife was looking at the children's books a few years ago. We were in a store, and she came over to me with a book, like a fairy tale book, a Disney book, where you read the fairy tale, and then you flip the book. And the other side was the same story from the villain's point of view.
Oh, wow.
So I, and, you know, I always have business on the brain, so I'm standing there in the Disney store going, that's perfect. That's it. You take a feud, and you have two guys tell the story separately. They don't hear what each other are saying. They're not in the room at the same time. And then you edit the answers next to each other, and you see how similarly they recall their time together. And then you put them both together to talk about what just happened. And that was literally the genesis of that idea. We put Greg and Tito together first for what I thought was a tremendous episode. And then we did a little NWA history with Nikita and Magnum, which I thought was great also. It was great to hear these guys, again, a very specific period in their life, not glossing over everybody they wrestled and were trained by and influenced by in 2 hours, but, you know, one specific time, married to another wrestler for a year or a year and a half, and talking about those times 25 years ago and hearing how they feel about it, and then putting them together in a room and just kind of watching the rapport and that silent bond that wrestlers have when they spend that much time together. I thought it worked very, very well. I'm very proud of the end product. The downside of the series, I think it was a little too high concept at the time. I think people did expect wrestlers to sit there and talk in front of a banner for 2 hours, Alan, and they got a little freaked out when they weren't. You know, we had launched with guest booker. We put out a few guest bookers, and then right at about the same time we launched You Shoot and My Side of the Story, right about the same time. And I don't know if they were ready for that. It might have been a little too high concept. It's also difficult from a scheduling standpoint with two pieces of talent, a little more expensive also. And so we decided to put that one to bed for a little while. Maybe someday we can do a My Side of the Story Mach 2 when the shoot world is ready for it.
Hopefully it will be. This is Sean Oliver, in case you're going, I know that voice. Why do I know him? Because he's been in your DVD player for the last few years. My dad, when he was here for my wedding to my wife this past October, I sat him down and threw in what was actually very enjoyable for him, because he grew up in the Northeast as well. I'm third generation Northeasterner of New York, was the great debate between the legend of Harley Race and the legend of Bruno Sammartino. And this is a twofold question. Talk about just even the concept of that, and is there a particular person that you did get to do any release that, as the fans like to say, you marked out for? Was it Bruno, Harley? Who would it have been?
Well, I'll take the second one first. No, not, boy. You know what? A weird thing happens to your brain, and it's a little unfortunate when you're a fan of something and then you become a participant in it in some way, a little notch, you know, lever gets switched and the thinking changes. I mark out for what I think is going to be, a great release. I marked out when we got Gary Hart, because I knew he'd be an incredible guest booker. Tragically, he died the next day after we shot.
Oh, God.
And then we sat on the release for a while. I didn't want to put it out. I thought there would be something a little disrespectful. Look, there would be enough companies out there standing on his casket, hawking their merchandise. I didn't want to be one of them. So I talked to his son and asked if it would be okay if we put it aside for a while, and he said that's fine, but his family definitely wanted it put out there. And we were happy to chronicle his mind forever. We were more than happy to of that release. So from an aspect like that, I get excited about a release. To go back to the great debate 08, Gabe Sapolsky once asked me, what do you guys smoke over there at that company? And the answer is nothing. We just let our imaginations go a little crazy sometimes. We were, it was during the, Obama debate, the presidential debates, 2008, before the election. And, we said, well, would it be great if we did a presidential style debate between two of the elder statesmen of the business, who would you get who could intelligently speak to the entire WWE legacy and also the entire NWA legacy? Well, the two names were very obvious, Harley Race and Bruno Sammartino. We got them together. It was a little interesting pitching the idea, the concept, but they were fine with it. It was great. A funny little story for you. One of the regrets I have of that that release was we shot it out in Nowheresville, Pennsylvania, and Harley's plane was grossly delayed, so we had a lot of extra time with Bruno, and we'll sometimes go for a bite to eat with the talent beforehand. I like to have a crew. A crew and talent dinner, if I can, because it helps break the ice and allows me to pitch the concept a little bit. And I think that comfortability comes across on camera. But anyway, so I said to Bruno, listen, let me get you a steak and a glass of wine, and we'll go talk. And he was extremely appreciative. So I gather the troops, and we head out. There was nothing. For miles, you know, growing up here in Jersey, in the shadow, literally the shadow of Manhattan, you take it for granted that you can get a nice steak within a 10-minute drive of anywhere you are here.
Oh, sure.
There was nothing. I ended up at a diner with Bruno Sammartino. I'm sitting there in a suit in a diner with Bruno and my crew. The poor guy had applesauce and chicken, for Christ's sake. But he was very appreciative anyway. He was a gentleman. He did not in any way. I apologize profusely for what I felt was an insulting gesture, making him order off I don't even remember the name of the joint, the Golden Eagle Diner or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, but he might have been the most famous person to walk in there with you. You never know.
Probably was, but I don't know. I don't think he was bothered much there. I think it was the...
I think it was maybe the early bird special at the time, so, you know, rural Pennsylvania crowd.
The two biggest popular, well, there's three popular ones, and we'll address them real quick here because I know we're pressed for time. The timeline history of the WWE series has had four visits, and we'll now have a fifth one with Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who I believe is going to address 1988. You've had The Rock, Don Morocco, The Magnificent Morocco address 1983, Honky Tonk Man address 1987, The Legend of Superstar Billy Graham address 1977 and 78, and Rikishi Fatu address 2000. Was this just your brainchild or the coexisting website's brainchild? And were any of these folks reluctant because of the Legends deals that WWE puts out to do it? And have you approached anyone that's turned you down for it?
No one's turned us down for that series yet. The WWE, though, did feel, I think they like the series because shortly after our second edition, they came out with an edition of their magazine called The History of the WWE. And when you opened it, Alan, guess what the entire magazine was. Take a guess. Take a guess what the graphic was that ran through the center of the entire magazine.
I'm going to guess
that's
the
right.
Really neat one you guys have.
A timeline.
Son of
the
a bitch.
The entire magazine was a timeline. And it's more than coincidence. I'm being jocular, but I know for a fact somebody over at the magazine, actually the media librarian at Titan Tower, did request. He and some of the guys over there really like our stuff, so I sent a box of our stuff up there for them to enjoy. 8 months later, the History of WWE magazine with a timeline comes out. I'll learn never to do that again. So clearly, WWE has a continuing love affair with our ability to still be creative and be respected by people who like wrestling. Another fine example of that, Alan, the John Morrison DVD that came out, I guess, earlier this year, fans could send in questions. How about that? Isn't that a novel idea? Where'd you see that? I don't know. Anyway,
No clue. Well, this leads to a second question that some friends emailed us at radioandonlineworldofwrestling.com and said to us, Alan, ask Sean this. We like the history of WWE series. Is there a possibility of a history of ECW or WCW in the works? And would it be interested? Would you be interested in that idea?
You have some very intuitive fans. We are actually, the history of ECW is in development right now. We wanted to get the first one out in the fourth quarter of 2010, but it's more than likely going to launch first quarter of 2011.
Can we tease who your guest is, or are we saving that for somewhere else?
No, but I'll tease this, though. It'll be done chronologically. Unlike WWE, where we bounce around year to year, we're going to start in 94 and take it right through the end.
Interesting idea. The second thing...
You brought up a question that I didn't address before. You wanted to know about the format, was it? The genesis
genesis.
Of the timeline series.
Yes, sir.
You know what it was? It was twofold. I know we will never see, unfortunately, an accurate and complete unauthorized or authorized, but it's got to be honest, history of the WWE. Have all the facts. There was a book that was kind of not sugar-coated, but glossed over a lot of stuff. The Sex, Lies, and Headlocks story, a book, rather.
Mike Mooneyham.
Right. We would never see Vince write, a 500-page, honest appraisal of that company and the early days of it, and it would never be complete enough to satisfy me. I'm a mark for detail. I'm a crazy detail junkie. I like all little pieces of information from the kayfabe era about wrestling. And so since we're never going to see the book, I said, well, what if we did an open-ended series and dedicated an entire two or three or however many hours each edition is? Probably wouldn't go over 3 hours unless it was Cornette, and you can't stop them. It's going over 3 hours anyway. Where each edition of the series was devoted to a year, and we brought in a piece of talent from that year. They had to be high up enough on the card where they'd know what was going on office-wise and backstage-wise. It couldn't really just be a hired hand who was there for a little bit of time. They'd have to be able to speak to the major events of the company and even the minor events. And so that one's DVD shelf over time would be an entire 50 or 60 volume set of the entire history of the WWE, one disc to a year, told by the talent, not a sanitized Connecticut version, but told by the people that were there. When Don Morocco talks about being in the emergency room behind the curtain with Eddie Gilbert, who was just in a car accident, and they wheeled a dying Nancy Valentino into the curtain next to him, whereby he goes back to the hotel and is watching Snuka be taken away in handcuffs. You can't get that kind of stuff from just reading an issue of The Observer. Those first-hand accounts are priceless. And I thought that would be a fascinating series. And along those lines, our head writer and also co-owner of the company, Anthony Lusignano, he wanted to do an edition of Guest Booker where we took 1 year and just went over an entire Booker's decisions and had them talk about those decisions. I felt that the thing about Guest Booker that made it work was that it wasn't their decisions. They were talking about things that they weren't involved in. But I had the idea for the series. I said, no, let's kind of mash the two together. Let's take one piece of talent and start in January and do copious amounts of research and tell the entire tale of a year in that federation. I think it succeeded. It's a tremendous series. Anyone who doesn't have it, do yourself a favor and check one out. You'll be hooked.
Absolutely. It's kayfabecommentaries.com. He is Sean Oliver. Before we get into you, Shoot, this question came in from the other room where my wife sits, watching 22 straight hours of Law & Order Special Victims Unit. Being that you're married, does your wife choose the outfits that you're wearing on camera? Because the outfit you're wearing in the Bob Holly out thing, my wife is sitting there going, wow, okay, what happened there? Who picks the clothes? Is it you? Is it your daughter? Is it your co-producers? Who picks the clothes?
What was I wearing in the Bob Holly interview? I don't remember.
I think you're wearing a beige suit with a pink tie.
Okay. Hold on, I got to be.
So who makes the decisions? Is it Mrs. Oliver? Is it you? Who's picking clothes?
I have to say that I do. I do. And the guest bookers are a little more on the conservative side, a little more traditional business attire. Perhaps if we were in the if we were doing creative in the Turner and CNN Tower, something I might be wearing. Whereas the U shoot is usually a little more fun, a little more colorful. There's a method to all this madness, as hopefully you're seeing right now.
Absolutely. Well, the next question that also came up, I've had this happen at some shows pre-tape where I'm sitting.
Let me cut you off.
Do your wardrobe. Do your wardrobe thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let me cut you off here and defend my heterosexuality for a minute. I do have to say that. At one point, or more than one point, I would talk about change, like just going casual or just doing like a jacket or whatever. But it had become such a part. It's like a gimmick that I have now. The other guys on the team here are like, no. What are you crazy? That's the gimmick. So now, like at a convention, I have to wear a damn suit. I'm like handcuffed to the suit.
Well, that leads to the next question. Who was it ever going to be debated? Because as you mentioned, the traditional shoot, as we do our mini-me quotes, is the talent sitting on camera for 2 hours, 4 hours, however long. Is it your decision? Was it Anthony's decision to put you physically on screen sitting with the person? Was it because you had seen the other company's shoots like High Spots or RF or Smart Mark and you said, no, I think the host sitting there is better than this anonymous voice off screen?
That's a really good question. Well, I'm on camera because, you know, I guess the answer, Alan, is, again, we come at it from a more traditional entertainment standpoint, and I've never seen an interview where we, in outside of the shoot interview world, of course, I've never seen an edition of 2020 or anything where you hear a floating voice and never see any kind of genuine interaction. You never see the interaction. It ceases to be a conversation. It almost becomes an interrogation, which for 3 hours is uncomfortable to watch. So I guess it's just because we came from a more traditional place from a production standpoint, but also the reason I'm there is because, A, I'm cheap, and B, as a director of the show, in a way, I have a trust issue with relinquishing control of the show. I know this way I'm going to get exactly what I need and exactly what I want from that talent. So I'm there to make sure that the show goes down how I want it to go. But the actual impetus to put me in there, yeah, I think it just came from a traditional production thing. You don't put somebody who's asking the questions off camera. It's a little goofy.
To get into a technical aspect for a minute, it's a three-camera shoot, and you're editing right on the site. How is it set up for fans that haven't ever seen a show?
It depends on the, I think that the great debate or the Ringside Demolition. One of those was the first, I don't remember the order they were released, but they were both shot in the same day, in two different cities. We did Demolition in the morning up here in North Jersey, and then, went down to, Nowheresville, Pennsylvania to do, the Bruno Harley race thing that night. But that was the first time we went to the two camera setup. Again, something that Anthony had proposed, I guess we did the one camera because that's what everyone else was doing, which is certainly not the reason to do anything. So we at that point went to a two camera setup four ring roasts. We employed a third camera. That's when we went to a third camera setup. But for the traditional studio shoot, or suite shoot, more accurate, we usually just do a two-camera shoot. Both high-def digital, and then edited as a multi. I don't know how technically you want to get here. It's edited as a multi-clip program on Apple.
Okay.
So it's the two source cameras record independently of one another. They're synced, you know, by a slate. And then I edit them down as multi-clips.
He is showing Oliver at kayfabecommentaries.com. The latest releases from the site include the U-Shoot with TNA President Dixie Carter and the Lost Questions with the legendary manager James E. Cornette. The U-Shoot concept seems to be the one that's taken off really well. And as I said, my in-laws are not wrestling fans at all. But thanks to you, they're fans of the Apprentice, Celebrity Apprentice show. And they were just like, oh, really? That's the girl from the show. Yeah, cool. Throw that in, but get right to that part. How soon after she was off Apprentice was the Maria Kanellis one done?
The great thing was she was still on the show when we did it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they of course had stopped taping, but she was still on the series the week we did it. She had not yet been eliminated. I think actually she was eliminated either the following week or 2 weeks after that on they aired that episode. But no, she was still a marquee name. It was a great score for us, and she was great. She was there weren't very many limitations. I think the only thing we couldn't broach because of a lot of her charity work was drug. Not that she was a participant in using any, but we play some games about the what's in the bag, and we talk about the drug use of other wrestlers. That was the one thing, because of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, that she didn't want to utter in the same breath, and that was understandable. I mean, we generally do not censor or edit anything in these shows, and when that crap starts, I put an end to it right away. It's either they're going to do the show or they're not. They have to put a little trust in our hands. That was a big part of the negotiation with CNA, to be honest with you, to get them to realize that and I had to say it patently to them, you do not produce this show. You go do Thursday night, because I can't, and you can, and you do it better than I would. But now you let me do You Shoot Live, because you can't do that, and I can, and I will do it better than you, because it's an independent body.
Well, before you go further, let me jump in here real quick, because we've talked about it on this show, the release of this DVD, and it was one of the things that when I told the bosses of Wild Talk Radio, they said, Sean agreed to come on, and said, well, you've got to ask them these couple questions that have been raised by a lot of the people that reviewed the disc, myself, Brad Diggins, other people did. It seems, as everyone knows from watching the U-Shoot series with Sabu, Sandman, New Jack, Raven, Missy Hyatt, Maria Kanellis, Bob Holly, Jamie Dundee, Kevin Sullivan, and Jim Cornette twice, and soon to be shot Sean Waltman, that their questions, and they're some of them are really ridiculous, thanks Off the Mark show for proving to me that all wrestling fans are morons. How controlled was this? Everyone reads it and goes, two things happened here, and one of the two things we felt as reviewers was TNA sat you down and said, this is what Dixie will and will not answer, and this is the way it goes. The other one I felt was people like the Off the Mark show and everyone that ripped the crap out of Bob Holly and went off on these other people, now because they're doing it face-to-face with the president of TNA Wrestling, basically frozen their tracks. Address this situation for us if you can.
Well, you know, a lot of the questions I thought were absolutely brutal that were posed to Dixie. I always look very curiously at anybody who says that, like, that TNA selected any questions. Believe me, they tried. And up until literally hours before they got on the plane, the morning of the shoot, I was in a conference call quoting the contract and telling them that it's not up to anybody to decide from entertainment value what would work and what wouldn't. Now, I do also have to say as a disclaimer, Dixie was game for anything. It was people around her, I think, that were a little nervous, didn't know if it would be handled in a professional manner. And, you know, listen, she's a multi-million dollar company. She's a well-educated businesswoman. Let her speak, you know? And then the flip side of that is I think a lot of fans expected her to cry and run out of the room. And when she didn't, they were disappointed. All I can guarantee you in an interview in this setting, now I could understand if I wrote all the questions and people thought I had like a lot of softball questions, I understand that criticism, but I turned this over to, and they asked anything they wanted to. And we aired, we certainly got far more questions than we put on, but they were edited for content and just for duplication. If we had 10 people ask a Russo question, we thought the funniest one to put on would be Cornette's.
Which
happens with all the Ushu releases. If, you know, people overlap with questions. There's no way to avoid that. So we'll choose the one that's best representative, of the question, of the tone that it should be asked in. And in this case, that was Cornette's. But anyway, they never sat me down. They never told me, what I could and couldn't ask, what fans could and couldn't ask. I did have them try to do that, to select questions. And again, right up until that very day, I was telling them everything that I had on that final script that they were looking at would be asked. And that's it. I fought very hard to maintain the integrity of the show. The fact that she's a professional woman, and whether you believe what she says or not, or whether her answer is sanitized or not, is open for debate, of course. But I can't answer her questions for her. Best I can do is allow the forum where fans pose the questions. She's a very polarizing figure right now. She's the TNA in general is in the news and the source of a lot of debate. I thought it would be a welcome opportunity for fans not to just sound off on message boards and internet sites, but to actually have her sit through every word that they crafted at their computer and have to listen to it and have to respond to it. That's the fascinating thing about this series, and that's the thing that will long live her answers, whether people think that they're, you know, kayfabed or not. What will survive it is that, damn, the owner of one of the big two sat down and listened to me shoot on her decision to XYZ and actually had to address it. I think it works from that standpoint.
Landstorm doesn't seem to share your belief in it. For fans that don't know, stormwrestling.com, yesterday he posted in his well-publicized blog commentary, whatever you wish to call it, that he somehow obtained a copy of this, and I'm not going to read every single thing that he wrote here, but he says that he was only a half hour in and was stunned that she even agreed to doing it, and says, on the whole, she comes off as a very nice person, and on a few occasions even comes off as a bit witty, but lowering herself to interacting with the video question portion of the DVD made her look so incredibly bad, in my opinion. The first question she answered was by a fat, shirtless, masked man sitting on a toilet who shows up on all the U-shoots. I think it was the masked shooter guy from Memphis, Tennessee, which I lived in Tennessee for 2 years. They don't talk like that. The guy asked the question in a stereotypical wrestling fan promo style. Also goes into the other great question was, why do you employ Vince Russo that James Cornette mentioned? And I can physically say from my standpoint, ever covering TNA for years, when she said the whole statement of, I the next time there was a fire Russo chant in the building, I'm going to fire somebody, I will raise my hand and say, Ms. Carter, I was actually in person in the impact zone during a match with Sting and Abyss where a casket was lowered from the roof. And as the casket is lowered from the roof, they're openly chanting Fire Russo, and guess who's standing over my shoulder there, Dixie? Yeah, Russo himself, as I'm sitting there typing out your show. You read this. You're the one who sent it to me. Share your feelings in a PG format. Remember, this isn't that kind of you shoot. on Mr. Lance Storm and his comments on the product, because he obviously hasn't seen the entire disc.
Right, which you know is of course a great launching point for writing a critical review that one wants you to take seriously, is to first not see the entire program, which and also obtain it by illegal means, which is another fantastic launching point for a review that's to be taken seriously and respected. I can only say that I look forward to Lance Storm's launch of a pro wrestling entertainment company of any form, whether it's a shoot style production company like ours, where he would maintain steady, significant growth quarter over quarter, year over year, as we have, and continue to be in the public eye generally with rave reviews, and certainly have a smart enough PR machine that we're always being talked about somewhere, and not have to resort to a lot of silly chicanery to do that. I look forward to seeing his company do that. I know that he was not a fan of the guest booker concept, and apparently he's not a fan of the You Shoot Live with Dixie Carter. Listen, I understand people in the business feeling that this was in some way should have been beneath Dixie Carter, but you know what? The people buy the tickets. The people pay the wrestler's salary. So I don't think it's beneath any business owner to say, I'm going to address the people on their terms. I am one of the people. I'm not in some gilded cage. I'm not some exalted figure. I want to talk to people. I want to hear their criticisms. And if we can do it in a spectacular form like a You Shoot Live, so be it. That's how I feel, Alan.
The other great place that people get to say what they want is your Ring Roast series that was launched with the Iron Sheik, followed up by Terry Funk, and this October, is he like part owner in this company now? Because this is what, like the 23rd Jim Cornette release? How did you talk Jim Cornette into doing this thing? And recently released on the Kayfabe commentary site is a connection with the legendary Loverboy Dennis and Beautiful Bobby, the Midnight Express.
Corny called us. We did the guest booker with Cornette. Some time had passed, I guess a year or so maybe, and he called me and said, you know, I'm going to be working with Ring of Honor. I really don't want to work with any of these companies. I've done shoots for all these companies. I want to be associated with you guys. Can we put something together? And I said, I think you'd be a good fit for this company. And I think a lot of the fans, based on sales and reviews and popularity, agree. Can't get enough Corny.
What's the ultimate get for you as a guest that would, like, totally blow your mind? Is it a Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Vince himself? Who's the ultimate get on the tote board in the office of Kayfabe Commentaries?
Bob Roop. I'm kidding. I think, we could say Hogan, but the truth be told, Hogan's interview would be very kayfabe. It would be, not even kayfabe, it would be a lot of revisionist history and a lot of fiction, quite honestly. I feel that's the case. I don't know that's the case. My sixth sense in this business is that the Hogan interview would not be very entertaining because of that. I think a Vince McMahon edition of Timeline, where we had all the facts laid out in the black and white and got him to talk about that stuff, would be phenomenal. So the Vince McMahon shoot interview, I'm going to get to work on it right now, Alan.
if for fans that have watched the recent Jim Cornette, the release, The Law of Questions, notice both Jim and I believe in the cover of the Maria Kanellis DVD, she's wearing some very nice t-shirt work that's done by a group called Heat Wear. Explain this whole concept, because they're pretty nice looking shirts. Who came up with the concept?
It's us. It's Kayfabe Commentary's apparel line, Heat Wear. Take a look at it at heat-wear.com. We simply take our programs and have the attitude of the program translated into t-shirt form. You can have Vader's Trans Countryman Lend Me Your Ear shirt, from which is of course from Ringside.
the ringside edition of that show. So it's just, you're now able to wear our programming, heat-wear.com.
Radar Online recently put up a very nice review of the company itself. What do you think of that kind of an organization just coming along and going, not solicited probably, and just going, hey, these guys are pretty cool. What does that say for kayfabe commentaries to have a site like that just show up and want to talk about you guys?
Yeah, it was great. I think it speaks to the fact that we're not like the other boys. I think we are kind of in a class unto ourselves in this specific niche of the industry. Shoot style wrestling programming. I think we kind of transcend that even a little bit now. I hate the shoot thing because it's beyond that now. It's genuine programming from an entertainment standpoint. Wrestling is the backdrop, certainly. But we have a lot of fun stuff coming down the pike, which is going to be geared a little more toward wrestling reality is what we're calling it. Certainly with a show like House Show, where we will now go to a fan's house with a star, and they spend the day there. And it's sandwiches in the kitchen with Grandma, and the Iron Sheik playing a little Guitar Hero. It's hanging with the stars of the ring. You'll see that probably first quarter of 2011. Also,
we're not gonna do a Judge the Genitals like you did with Missy Hyatt, but I gotta ask the what's in the bag concept. If the bag was put in front of you to talk about all the guests that you've had, the Jack Daniels is pulled out in front of you, Sean, of everyone you've interviewed, who's the Jack Daniels?
Sandman.
Okay, you got the doobie. Obviously, Sabu is the reigning roll the joint champ. Is he, what was the time he did? I think it was like amazing.
18 seconds.
Damn. So Sabu obviously would be that. Who's the bottle of pills, the painkillers?
so many names to choose from. You know what? I'll be honest with you. This is a boring answer, but a lot of that stuff, I don't allow any of that stuff on set. Everyone can have a cocktail, but it's too much liability. We take the company very seriously. You know, we employ guys with families. We don't have that stuff on set. But having said that, I think Sabu also told some very funny stories about Percocets and Vicodin and whatnot. So maybe he's the answer for that one too.
All right. Was Jamie Dundee impaired before he ever sat down with you guys, or was that just?
Brother, oh my lord, Jamie, yeah. Jamie was upstairs. Jamie was doing something in a room upstairs on video before he came down to us. And
okay.
It sounded like a war zone up there, and all of us downstairs were going, we're getting this next, we're getting this after this, and he came in 100 miles an hour. I mean, you saw what happened. I think he actually, if I'm not mistaken, he took the payday, got on the plane moments after we finished our show, went home, and went out and got arrested.
I think that's right. I think the timeline follows in there.
Yeah, so, you know, clearly he was having a great time.
The next coming releases, thanks to Kayfabe Memories, which is the message board forum for your site, mentions, in addition, unfortunately, this interview is going to air after the date, I believe September. What's the cutoff for Sean Waltman questions? Is it the 10th, or are the interviews on the 10th?
We're going to be shooting it on the 10th, so...
So we'll
probably
miss everybody, unfortunately, I'll miss out. But if you were a fan of our message board at OWW Genesis, you got your question in, hopefully it'll be there. The other names that popped up on the board, we already know the release of Hacksaw Jim Duggan in the Timeline series of 1988. Can you address the names of Dutch Mantel and Lisa Moretti, also known as Ivory, for upcoming releases?
Yeah, guest booker with Dutch. coming in December, and timeline with Ivory will be in 2011. We have a lot of cool stuff in store, and I thank you for allowing me this forum to put the spotlight on it, my friend.
Absolutely. Sean Oliver has been our guest here. We'll be back after this commercial break on Online World of Wrestling Radio. But through the pain and the suffering, through the heartache and trembling,
this is Mace with an announcement from the head of the Wild Talk Radio Network. With the goal in mind to keep ratings as high as they are with DJ Tim Stein and DJ Sir Rockin', the Wild Talk Radio Network hereby releases Maverick and Nick from the network. Just kidding, guys. This is the Wild Talk Radio Network, where friends get together to have fun and make fun of Mav.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestlers today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Bret
Derry.
Candice LaSalle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Bret the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the quickest of all time.
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Do you have a certain passion? Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or Anything Goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talkie Talk Live, all you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
This is the Godfather of Extreme, Rob Parks. Tune in every Saturday, midnight-ish, for CB Radio. right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to All in World of Wrestling Radio on Depeche Mode Night and also Kayfabe Night. Thank you so much to Sean Oliver. Did 61 minutes and 37 seconds with us and killed any chance we ever had of getting Lance Storm and Rob Feinstein on this program ever. Thank you so much. We are catch-up work. We've had some notes I want to share with the audience. They're having fun enjoying some talk in our chat room about Dust and Gutters and NXT. And feel free to comment in the chat room, and also don't forget to join our official forum, which is the OWW Genesis, the gold standard in pro wrestling. You can get to that through onlineworldofwrestling.com, which is the folks that do provide me this forum each and every week. Didn't get a chance to do this with Spug and everyone else on the air, but we're going to have a retirement soon. No, it's not me. I'm sure there's some radio shows that wish I would leave because we keep getting all these awesome guests, and we've got another one for next week, too. We would love to have had Matt Heisen on the show, but if you're in St. Albans, Vermont, attending for Real Action Wrestling, you're going to see Spike Dudley's last match. He has announced that he is retiring, and we wish Matt Heisen nothing but the best. Brought some entertainment as Spike Dudley, Brother Ron's, and good luck to him in whatever he decides to do. There's several events this weekend, and we're going to run a few of them for you. I'm going to be attending one, so I'm going to pub it big time. But before we get to that, if you've been listening to us online or been on other programs on this network, you know of a certain YouTube incident with a certain former WWE star and a promotion that the name of FWX Wrestling was brought up. Well, it's come to their attention that one of its North American competitors, namely Ring of Honor Wrestling, has used footage from a commercial for WFX Overload, which will take place in October, without any permission or license to do so in an effort to promote their pay-per-view, which we'll address in a couple minutes here. The footage in question used to promote is of Charlie Haas for what they're calling the struggling Northeast company as they run their event in New York City. The executives at WFX were not amused. CEO Jeff Dyck, however you want to pronounce it, D-Y-C-K, said, well, the way I see it, ROH can send FWX a payment for the money they saved from not having to go to Texas to produce footage for their own to promote Charlie Haas that they instead chose to steal, which that they had absolutely zero rights to our company. Mike Davidson, who does their play-by-play for TV, also had to chime in with this statement. It's a piss-poor business move from a company that is a bit of a joke, if you ask me. Ow, he's throwing a heavy baseball bat there, and it doesn't give any life. Because in our humble opinion, guys such as Delirious, Chris Hero, and Austin Aries pale drastically in comparison to the brand name talent we use. Would they do this to TNA or WWE? No, of course they wouldn't, but today they did a hell of a job of legitimizing our company. WF some assist to owner Kerry Silken, but already VP Mike Davidson, who does their TV, sent him a
Facebook note that actually read, "Disrespect intended. Please accept every disrespect intended in his email. Your company Ring of Honor is using WFX wrestling footage to promote Charlie Haas for your upcoming internet pay-per-view. Please stop immediately. Get all the footage that belongs to WFX." Wow. It's pretty heavy duty. Ring of Honor does have an event this weekend, and we'll address that in a second. If you're a fan of Dragon Gate USA, get ready to go to GoFightLive.com or it's GoFightLive.tv because starting on October 29th, they're going to be on internet pay-per-view. Their first internet pay-per-view is going to be Bushido, Code of the Warrior. Dragon Gate USA will emanate from Fall River, Massachusetts for that event. Dragon Gate USA President Satoshi Oji said, "This is a really exciting opportunity. GoFight Live is the next logical step in the growth of DGUSA. The chance to put on a live worldwide show is absolutely tremendous and will let us put our best foot forward." VP Gabe Sapolsky chimed in with, "We will put out all the stops to make this a very memorable event. We're going to show the world why Dragon Gate USA is pro wrestling's premium product. Already announced for this is the Open the Dream Gate champion Masato Yoshino, the Open the Freedom Gate champion BXB Hulk, the legendary Aki Bono, Sima, Genki Horiguchi, Shingo Yamamoto, Jimmy Jacobs, John Moxley, who is the FIP World Heavyweight Champion, Mike Quackenbush, and Jigsaw. If you're in the Tampa Bay area this Friday night, get your butt to the Scottish Rite Masonic Center, which is 5500 Memorial Parkway, sorry, Highway in Tampa, Florida, for a Wrestling for a Cause event. Wrestling for a Cause is an amazing group that basically puts on charity events all over. They do them all through the state of Florida. This one is WrestleWar 2010. What makes this event so spectacular is a couple things. One, it's benefiting the Town and Country Packers, which is a local football team. You can go to wrestlingforacause.org, and you'll find out that not only will you get to see some kick-ass wrestling matches with folks like Becky Bayless, who will take on supermodel Amy Love, the Black Nature Boy Scoot Andrews versus the Saint, the Marquis Bruce Santee versus Navy Seal in an old school match, a teacher versus student match, and Billy Fives versus the rap magnate David Babylon, a first time ever match of Marvelous Mike Sullivan, who's also known as the Freedom Rider, who's done, like Scoot Andrews and Bruce Santee and Billy Fives, some WWE and TNA work over their careers. He'll be taking on former World Japan superstar, and he's done some NWA dates. Steve Moose Madison. The main event will be a rematch from their event in Sanford recently. It's a no disqualification, anything goes match between former WWE, WCW star Iceman Buck Quartermain and former WWE TNA superstar Kip Billy Gunn James. And if you're sitting there going, "Well, what's the other thing, dude?" Check this out. If you're a football fan, bring your gear. Bring your Bucks gear because you will get to meet a man who should be in the Hall of Fame any minute now, your favorite of mine, Derek Brooks. Go to Wrestle for a Cause for that. If you're not into that and you like, "Well, I like other kind of wrestling in Tampa, Alan," fine. Go to aswflorida.com and you can find out about All Stars Wrestling of Florida. They run a really nice show on Friday nights at Strokers of Hillsborough Avenue. Strokers is a billiard hall. From 7 to 9, you can play free pool and also get 2-for-1 drinks. Go to their website and check that out. The reason why we're doing this is because all these people send information to us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com when the big boss Brad Dykin said, "Hey, you want to pub your shows? Alan's got a mic. Alan will go ahead and do it because, well, he likes talking about wrestling." If you're in the Nashville area this Friday, USWO and ATL at the Stadium Inn, our good friend Michael Patrick, who works for Wrestling for a Cause, who's going to be involved in that event, was recently up there and said he had a blast. They host a show this Friday night. The main event will be the USWO champion Jeff the Crippler Daniels, who is also a former NWA World Tag Team Champion, will be taking on the Shelby Street Baller Josephus. Teen sensation Drew Hackens will take on the Crow Show Josh Crow. The Music City Championship of the Psycho Medic will be defended against Playboy James Duncan. And other matches, including a ladies' match, Mallory Mendez taking on DeBella. Now, as we mentioned with Kevin and Phil earlier, the Northeast is the place to be this weekend. And it's a little weird that this Saturday is the 9th anniversary of my Uncle Frank Palumbo dying in September 11th. He was in one of the towers as a New York City firefighter when they all went down. And Saturday is never a September 11th is never a fun day. They didn't make it exactly easy for wrestling fans because they've got a bunch of shows going on. First off, September 11th in Rahway, New Jersey, the Rahway Rec Center. I sound like blah, 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 blah there for a second. Rahway Rec Center. Thank you. 275 East Milton Avenue, bell time of 4 p.m. You're going to get to see a main event of Brian Danielson, not Daniel Bryan, Brian Danielson, taking on Minoru Sawa. And I know Lenny Leonard is sitting somewhere going, that's not... this is Evolve Wrestling, evolvewrestling.com. Where you can you can find your ticket information for that. Also on that event, we mentioned Mike Quackenbush will take on Chuck Taylor. The WSU World Championship will be defended by Mercedes Martinez, a guest on this show, by against someone that we really, really want on this show, and that would be Amazing Kong. Also on the show, Jimmy Jacobs takes on Adam Cole. Sami Callihan takes on Drake Younger. Kyle O'Reilly takes on Ricochet. Cheech and Cloudy will take on Flip Kendrick and Lewis London. One win on the line, you'll see Brad Allen versus Johnny Gargano versus Grand Akuma versus John Moxley versus Frightmare versus Rich Swann. You'll also have a special appearance by one of our favorites of this show, the Notorious 187. That's right, Homicide will be there. He will be signing autographs. Now, it's a special bell time of 4 o'clock because across the water, WFX probably won't want us talking about it, but we're going to do it real fast. It is Glory by Honor 9, which is Ring of Honor's spectacular at the Hammerstein Ballroom, the Manhattan Center on the 7th floor, 311 West 34th Street. For that event, you can call 212-279-7740. From 6 to 7:30, there is a special VIP meet and greet with the legendary Terry Funk. And Terry will have tickets purchased through the ROH website, ROHwrestling.com. That ticket that we found out from the big bosses at ROH, that's not admission to the pay-per-view. You must already have a pay-per-view ticket to enter the session. Now, if you're not sitting there going, yeah, I can't get there, dude. Well, go to GoFightLive.tv, and for the amount of $14.95, you're going to get to see ROH World Champion Tyler Black and possibly his last match. Well, it is because he signed with WWE Developmental, taking on a favorite of this show, the Messiah of the Backbreaker, Roderick Strong. You'll get the Dream Tag Team match, the ROH World Tag Team Champions, the Kings of Wrestling, Claudio Castagnoli, and the Chris Hero, with Shane Hagedorn taking on the world's greatest tag team of Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. We had two of these competitors on our show recently in a double chain match. El Generico and Colt Cabana are going to take on Kevin Steen and the King of Kings, the King of Old School, and a big Phillies fan. Sir Rockin's loving that because the Phillies are real close to getting back in a first. Steve Corino, the world television champion, Eddie Edwards, is going to defend against former WWE and TNA superstar Sean Daivari with Prince Nana. Two ROH namestays, Austin Aries is going to take on the Fallen Angel Christopher Daniels. Also scheduled for this event, the All Night Express with our buddies Katie King and Rhett Titus. Also Embassy members Eric Stevens and the Necro Butcher, plus the Briscoe Brothers who recently signed a deal. If you couldn't get to see Brian Danielson in Jersey, well, you get to go out to Long Island to see him. Get in a train, but ride out to St. James, New York, because NYWC is preventing Never Back Down. It is at the Sports Arena, 620 Middle Country Road. Bell time is 7 p.m. Tickets for this event are $15 in advance or $20 at the door by logging on to nywc.wrestling.com, or you can call them at 631-667-6992. The main event of this event is the NYWC champion Maverick Tony Nese and WWE superstar Daniel Bryan taking on the Greek god Demetrios Papadon, who I have seen wrestle in person. He's awesome. And yours truly, Alex Reynolds. The NYWC Fusion Championship will be on the line as the champion number one, John Silver, will take on King Mega with Prince Charles. Not that Prince Charles. The NYWC Tag Team Champions, Big Time Rush, which is Big Time Tony Burma and Ryan the Adrenaline Rush, will take on ECW legend Mikey Ripwreck and Scyther. Kieran Mansfield with Michael Mansfield will take on TNA superstar, well, he hasn't aired yet, but they're calling him it anyway, Rob Echoes with his little brother, the Blowout Boy, Dan Echoes. If you're in Florida, you've got not one but two shows you can check out. It depends on where you live. If you live in the Orlando area, Sanford is the place you need to be for Vintage Wrestling's No Mercy Here. It is also presented by 50 Million Toys. It is at the Sanford Salvation Army Gym, 700 West 24th Street. And you'll see some very interesting action there. TNA superstar Jesse Neal will challenge Vintage Heavyweight Champion, the Stimulus Sam Shaw, with his manager Robin Donahue in a 2-out-of-3 falls match. The Vintage Tag Team Champions and have done a couple matches in TNA Wrestling, namely Dark and Explosion. Los Bandejos will defend against the European Union, Adam Windsor and Neil Faith. Sin Bodhi, the Carnival Freak, is going to take on a favorite of this network as well, Francisco Chiazzo, who unfortunately is walking around Vintage in, a dress. Sorry, Frankie, but that's what you're wearing, dude. You got to win, Frankie, to get the dress off. Falls Count Anywhere match, the Raw Dog, the Epic, he's got a bunch of nicknames. At one point, actually, hailed from the mean streets of Quahog, Rhode Island, Aaron Epic and Biff Slater are going to take on the Northeast All-Stars with Eric Cooper and the Emerald Emperor, the Jade General, Simon Says. Vintage Internet TV Champion, the Prodigy, Mike Cruz, is going to take on Gus Money. If you live in the Fort Myers area, Sarasota, Bradenton, and that stuff, get to Southern Championship Wrestling's event, Ring Wars, with a bell time of 7:30 with a 6 p.m. meet and greet. It's at the Lee County Civic Center, 11831 Bayshore Road in Fort Myers. You can go to SCWWrestling, all one word, no spaces.com. And the main event is a Kings versus King match. That's right, the 2006 WWE King of the Ring winner and former multi-time world champion Booker T is going to take on the 1999 King of the Ring winner and former world tag team champion multi-times over, Kip James. Also in tag team action, the New Yorkerans, who I actually got to see at ASW recently, very well put together team, going to take on the Tokyo Monster, Cahagas, and wrestling legend Hector Guerrero. There is a tag star Sean of Fabulousville, the Heartbreak Express. But who's going to answer the challenge? You're going to have to be there to find out. Some Florida superstars such as Jason Hex is going to take on Johnny Vandal. Pablo Marquez is going to take on the Dirty White Boy. Flatline is going to take on Craig Classic. And also in attendance, here's two names that you definitely want to hang out with. Former WWE TNA superstar B.G. James and one of the best looking women in the world of wrestling, former TNA superstar knockout diva and all around nice person, Tracy Brooks will be there. You can actually purchase your tickets through the Lee County Civic Center box office at 941-543-7469. Tickets range from $10 at general admission, reserve at $25 and $35, and $45 at ringside. Ouch. And lastly, we mentioned the Friday night USWOATL show in Nashville. If you're not doing anything on September 11th, and you like ladies action, the PGWA, in conjunction with our friend Miss Rachel's group, which is WXCW, is hosting a call to arms at the Stadium Inn. The PGWA champion, Tracy Taylor, is going to take on former WWE Women's Champion and current number one contender of the WSU Championship, Jazz. Christy Ricci is going to take on the former PGWA champion, Riptide, Angel Orsini, who is awesome. She is a great person to sit and BS with. Stories galore from her. Jana is going to take on Marty Bell. The first lady of USWO, Miss Rachel, is going to take on Mickey Knuckles. Brittany Forrest takes on Nemesis. And making her Stadium Inn debut, Mary Kelly is going to take on DaBella. If you want your events read on our show, and if you're a fan of your promotion in your local area and going, dude, you didn't talk about my show, write radio at onlineworldofwrestling.com. we'll talk about it. You know, if you got a wrestler that you're like, I know Jersey Girl's been wanting us to have Chance Profit on the show, and you're like, dude, my guy should be on your show. Write us. Tell us. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. There's a lot of people apparently don't like a lot of the stuff we do, like keep booking awesome guests. And having an awesome network, like the Wild Talk Radio Network, to be a part of. Tomorrow night, Otaku Talk Live with the Spud Guy, Mace Omega. I was on their show last week. Oh, my God, are these guys crazy? You think I can talk? These guys make me look like nothing. And if you're wondering, what's your Otaku Talk, sir? It's Geek Talk. They'll talk movies. They'll talk anime. They'll talk comic books. They'll talk video games. They'll talk anything geek style. Thursday night, 11-ish, if Sir Rockin' is still with us here, is there an Anything Goes tonight on Thursday night, sir?
Yeah, there'll be an Anything Goes this Thursday night, 11-ish time. We'll have a variety of topics, variety of hosts, all that crazy fun. It was fun last week, it'll be fun this week, and it's always fun with the lovely and talented Cindy Sin.
And is Friday night going to be a DJ night again, or do we not have anybody booked yet for that?
DJ Tim Stein always goes on the air about playing music and stuff and talks his random games and news and whatever. DJ Nights
awesome.
With Tim Stein. It's always fun.
And then of course, Sir Rockin' gets to be on the air again with The Godfather.
Yeah, The Godfather Extreme Rock Parks. Yeah, we didn't have him last week, but we might have him this week. Who knows? He's working. He worked till like 2:30 in the morning that night after starting at 11 a.m.
Did Ric Flair come in again for food?
No. Ric Flair didn't come in for food, but we didn't tell that story yet. Shh. No one knows that story yet.
Oops. Nobody knows, right.
No,
got it.
No one's listening to us.
Of course not, just the millions of people that download us thanks to finding us on iTunes and finding us a Click Wrestling. And, of course, OWW Radio is featured on the Wrestle Talk Radio website, which is this Sunday night, wildtalkradio.com.
Right.
This past Sunday, we were available to talk for, God, lengths of time about the TNA event. And I'm very happy WWE didn't book back-to-back events again.
Oh, me too.
There will be a roundtable with the Spud Guy, Mace, Omega, possibly Will. The guru of the internet, Tim Stein, will be there as well. Sir Rockin' will be there making sure we actually keep on our times and I don't act like a complete ass when I'm on their show. thanks so much to... Go ahead.
No, I'm just laughing. Keep going.
Yeah, thank you so much to Phil Strum, Kevin Scott of Under the Ring. Definitely check them out through the Poughkeepsie Journal website. The Spud Guy for joining us, the amazing Sean Oliver, who gave us an hour, 67 minutes and 13 seconds of his life, which was amazing. We do have at least one interview in the works for next week. It does look like we will have the current reigning NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Adam Pearce. In one form or another, is scheduled to be here next week on this program, either live or in a pre-taped format.
But as they say, Alan, but as they say, card subject to change.
Exactly. Without notice from the promoter.
Exactly.
I want to thank Sir Rockin' for keeping us on track tonight. Thanks to everyone that actually called in. We had callers, dude! Holy crap, man!
I know, and they weren't crazy. But also, yes. Stay tuned for music, too. As we go
And Spug is saying that there will be a new great debate this Sunday. Can you shed any light on that?
I can't shed anything, but it's different than what we've done. Let's just say that.
Yes.
Very different.
And of course, I can't go any further without thanking the big gurus, Jason Dedrich, Brad Dykens, and of course, I get to thank one of my favorite bands of all time that at one point has had Alan Wilder, Andrew Fletcher, Martin Gore, the voice of Dave Gahan, Vince Clark, some other players over the years. I got to see them a bunch of times in concert. I own every CD that they've ever created, hence why Depeche Mode was on here tonight. The other artists that could possibly be featured in the next couple weeks include Billy Joel, Sarah McLachlan, and a fourth act to be named later. So thank you so much for joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. As mentioned, tell your friends about us. We are the best thing going on Tuesday nights or any night because we're not a jerk-off podcast and our guests actually get to talk and you actually get to interact with them. And I'm not selling barbecue sauce, baby.
Online World of Wrestling Radio is always can be found at onlineworldofwrestling.com. I've done enough plugging. My voice is shot. I thank the people in the chat room for being here, and I think they actually want DJ Rockin' Sock.
Yeah, they want me to continue this whole party. And so stay tuned to wildtalkradio.com and come back every single day, because you never know what we'll be doing.
Yes, and going out to the Spug guy, here it is, off Violator, the best-selling one of the best-selling singles in Depeche Mode history. It is Personal Jesus. I'm out of here. Have a good night.